employers are racing to fill it by offering more apprenticeships and fewer jobs for graduates. There is also, of course, a relatively high rate of unemployment, the highest it's been since the dog days of the lockdowns. And so that is the first circle I'd like you to square. And the second is, I'm going in again. I've never fully succeeded in this question of what exactly are all of the young people who are relatively healthy but not in work, education or training doing with themselves? And I ask, I promise, from a place of love.
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Hamas has insisted it is working to return the bodies of Israeli hostages as agreed in Donald Trump's ceasefire deal. The remains of three of the four people who were handed over last night have been identified, but Israeli officials say the fourth body does not match any of the captives. Surviving hostage Yair Horn says they must all come home.
This deal includes all the hostages until the last one. It's home. None of us can really heal or imagine a better future.
Vets could be forced to publish price lists and put a cap on the cost of providing prescriptions. The competition watchdog, which has been investigating the market, has proposed sweeping changes. It's warned many pet owners are paying over the odds for medicines at vet practices. Lucy Eyre is from the Competition and Markets Authority.
Something we're hoping to put in place is a requirement on vet businesses and vets to inform consumers that they can buy these sorts of ongoing medicines online and that they may be cheaper. And to do that, you need to get a prescription, and we're going to cap the price of getting that prescription.
A man who was shot during the Manchester synagogue attack has been discharged from hospital. Yoni Finlay is believed to have been hit by a police bullet in Crumpsall earlier this month. It's understood he was helping to barricade the building's doors as Jihad al-Shami carried out the terror attack. Ofcom has warned it's unacceptable. Royal Mail is failing to deliver millions of important letters on time. It's required to deliver 93% of first-class post on time, but only managed a success rate of 77% last year. The firm, which says it's making improvements, has been fined £21 million. Premier League footballers will take the knee this weekend for the first time this season. It's part of the Top Flight's No Room for Racism campaign. The move has been backed by team captains, but individual players can decide to opt out. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 94.19. That is down 32. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, largely cloudy without breaks of light rain. Some brighter spells in Scotland, Wales and Western England. A high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10. A very good morning indeed to you. We have a slightly different flavour to the top of the show this morning. There are various statistics around. Apprenticeships are on the rise and graduate vacancies are dropping. This is a survey by the Institute of Student Employers, but we also know that the unemployment figures today, although stabilising, probably in time for the budget, somewhat felicitously for Rachel Reeves, are higher than anybody would like them to be, around the level that they were last reaching towards the end of the last lockdown. And the skills shortage remains acute, coupled with the fact that this government is dedicated to making it much harder for people to come here from overseas to fill those skills shortages. The story about needing to speak A-level, is that a tautology, or is that actually a correct use of the English language? Oh, Lord, I probably have to get deported now if I've misused. Is it, you'd say A-level, or would you say A-level? It's A-level level. Because it's not an A-level. They're not doing an A-level. They need to be the equivalent of an A-level. So that's A-level level. So you see the young colleagues I have shaking their heads at me. They've learned nothing over the years that we've worked together. I'm pretty sure it would be A-level level. If it's not an actual A-level, yes, A-level standard, which would mean A-level level. It just sounds tautologous, even though it probably... Anyway, I digress. You probably haven't even seen the story. You think I've gone completely doolally already this morning. The story is people coming here will have to speak A-level level English. That's not quite the story. Needs a little bit more flesh on the bones before we get stuck into it. But it will be very specific jobs that I don't think those of us who worry about the direction of rhetoric coming from the government regarding immigration need to be unduly exercised by this. For example, who could argue with the idea that medical practitioners, doctors, teachers and the like have to have certain standards or levels, even A-level level, of English before they can accept a job? You'd hope that they wouldn't... get a job currently, but anyway, we'll see. And those are the sort of pieces that I want you to knit together for me today. I think I'm going to start with the young people and the nearly a million young people who are, to use that dreadful phrase, neat, not in education, employment or training. But I very much want to marry it to the story in the news today, the statistics in the news today about apprenticeships and degrees. Graduate salaries have declined over the past decade in real terms, while salaries for school and college leavers have grown, only modestly, but there is a profound direction of traffic. There's still about a 10 grand gap, by the way, between a graduate starting salary and a school leaver starting salary, but the gap is narrowing from both ends. And... Well, look, I'll be completely honest with you, right? There are two questions here. One I really hate asking, and one I've never really got satisfactory answers to. So if that's not a recipe for an absolutely appalling phone-in, then I don't know what is. The question that I really hate asking is whether or not it is wrong to encourage our children to go to university, whether or not it is no longer a given that it will improve their lives and, crucially, enhance their job prospects. Because the difficulty of getting a graduate job was already high, and it's gone down by another 8% in the last year, the first drop since a 12% decline during the pandemic. And then the second question, the one that I've never got a satisfactory answer to, but I'm never going to stop trying. What do you do all day? This is the one that fascinates me most. Seriously. My generation are conditioned to think of not being in education, employment or training as being an enormous white flag that you're waving at society. The idea is that you are not sufficiently resilient, or you're lazy, or you're sponging, or you're faking a mental illness or neurodiversity. I know that you're not. I know that you're not. The massive majority of these young people are inscrutable. I just don't get it. And I think I might have worked it out. I think that we are extending adolescence as a society. I don't know what you do at the end of this period, but I think the combination of lockdown and the jobs market, the mental health impact of lockdown, has created environments in many homes where you just kind of carry on after leaving school as you were before. You found it hard to get a job, so you've stopped trying, or you haven't tried at all because you know how hard it is. Mum or dad is still cooking your tea. The fridge has still got food in it. The laundry still gets done, whether you do it yourself or whether somebody else does it. You've got a bedroom that you've had since you were a nipper, and you've just sort of carried on without joining what I would loosely describe as the adult world, or perhaps more fairly, the world of workers. I don't know that there can be any better explanation than that. The idea that everybody's making a fortune as an Instagram influencer or dealing drugs on the dark web or making a mint out of Vinted or whatever it may be, doing online trading, it just doesn't hold water. You might be earning pin money doing some of those things, hopefully not the illegal one. But the idea that you are, operating at an economic level akin to having a job when you haven't got a job is just absurd. So, and even as I ask you this, even as I explain this to you, I know that It doesn't work. Nobody ever tells me. I occasionally speak to the odd parent. And parents are more interesting in a way than the young people in this context, because you are not angry. You're looking at your child who is not in education, employment or training, and you know they're not lazy, and you know they're not unpleasant, and you know that they're not any of the things that they might somehow be sometimes be portrayed as. There's just been a disconnect after the pandemics with the cogs aren't meshing. There's the world of work whirring away over there, and then there's the world your children inhabit whirring away over there. And for, I mean, you know, it's in the high teens, the percentage number, so it's not all of them, but it's a flipping big, it's a much bigger number than overall unemployment in this country, that the cogs are not meshing. Young people are not engaging in the world of work on anything like the level that previous generations have done or other generations currently do. So, how hard is it? 0345 6060 973. As a graduate or a school leaver, how hard is it to find a job? And this is actually really important, not least because, economic disillusion is a great driver of the ugliest politics in the world. And in this country, we've been quite lucky historically that the far right haven't really got a hold on our youngsters. But that tide seems to be changing, and the harder it is, or the less engaged they feel with the world of work, they, the more likely they are to fall into the clutches of liars, whose business, of course, is to keep the rich people rich and the poor people scared. To paraphrase Batman Begins, which I watched for the very first time last night, and I took that. That's a great line. I think it's Gary Oldman's character who says, I know, I can't believe I've never watched it before. It's a great film. So, lockdown's plural, pandemic singular. Everyone's a pedant, aren't they, these days? Sorry, Alison. I just want to know two things. I hate this question. I hate this question because it's so privileged of me to ask this. Do we send too many people to university? 0345 6060 973. Do we send too many people to university? I hate that question. I hate that question because I'm like one of those conservatives who says, oh, we must have more apprenticeships. And then someone like me says, well, will you be signing your own children up for these apprenticeships? And they go, well, don't be ridiculous. I didn't spend £40,000 a year on school fees in order to sign my child up to become a welder. But of course, you can do apprenticeships in white collar work as well. I don't know. I hate it. I hate the question because I've got one child at university and one who is probably going to go, not definitely, certainly a lot less of a train track than it was when I was their age. You know, the idea that there was anything else you could do after leaving school if you came from a background and had an education like mine was unless you were going to drama school or art school or something fancy pants like that, you would get a degree. In fact, you'd often get a degree from art school or drama school as well. But there's a sort of class-based presumption that you go on to university. But now you look at the numbers, and these are numbers that apply right across the board. It's not just what... Oh, again, something else I hate saying out loud. What we used to call Mickey Mouse degrees, which almost always turn out to be considerably more rigorous and relevant than the tabloid depictions allow. So that's part of the reason I hate asking this question. Are we sending too many young people to university? And I hate using the phrase Mickey Mouse degrees, because when you look into the things that we used to think, my dad used to call it, you could get a degree in babby washing these days, my dad used to say. And I'm a father's son. When I arrived in this studio for the first time, when I first got this job, I used to rail against things like media studies as a complete waste of time, because I got into journalism without a media studies degree, and I'm amazing. But of course, media studies, they do it. It's compulsory in places like Latvia and Estonia, so that we're equipping young people to actually deal with the misinformation that's pouring out of Russia like an avalanche. So media studies is a good thing to do. But is it worth doing a degree in if you've got precious little chance of becoming a journalist? And then I've got this very, again, middle class hang up about the benefits of university that have nothing to do with degrees or enhancements of employability. I wasted 4 years at university, and you can tell how much I wasted because it was a 3-year course. I wasted 4 years doing a 3-year course at university, and I completely wasted it. I'm not being funny. I used to think it was clever. Same way I used to think it was clever to have got expelled from school. Makes me cool. I'm an idiot. An absolute idiot. If I could have my life again, oh, man alive, the things I would do differently would begin and end with my approach to formal education. Thinking of the sacrifices that mum and dad made to send me to those flipping schools and the absolute cake. Like, I came out with decent grades, all right? So, you know, in that sense, the transaction was okay. But in the sense of having availed myself of all the opportunities I could have done at university, an absolute joke. But I watched other people live incredible lives. Martin, who was on the show yesterday, Martin Lewis, was at university at the same time as me, and he absolutely bloomed and blossomed. He'd had, I interviewed him on Full Disclosure, and we've spoken about this, so I'm not betraying any confidences, but he had a tough time in his teens. The poor lad lost his mum, and he kind of signed out of school. A-levels were coming up, and he just somehow managed to find a surge of study that got him into LSE, and he just embraced everything. I barely remember, but looking back, he was in all the societies, running for sabbatical offices, living his best life. And most kids do. And the kids who were from backgrounds that were more humble than mine were the kids who really got the most out of going to university, going to somewhere like the London School of Economics. Doing something incredible, learning things, having horizons open up in front of them that would never have opened up before. In many ways, it's the middle-class kids for whom university is a presumption who should be thinking twice about going, and the working-class kids who would get shown windows through which to look that they'd never have encountered otherwise, who should be taking up their places at university. Do it with an IQ test or something, rather than with A-level results. So, you see what I mean when I said it was a bit of a jigsaw, this morning's introduction, because I am interested in what the people who aren't doing anything do all day, but I never get calls on that. I don't know why. I'm quite good at this job. That's not immodest. That's not an opinion. It's counting. But I never, ever get the calls on this. So there are a million families out there, maybe slightly fewer if you accept that there'll be, you know, more than one child in some of the homes where this is the case. There are a million families out there, give or take, where there is a young person, someone over 18, someone aged between 18 and 25, who don't have anything to do formally when they get up every morning. And I have never, it's probably the fourth or fifth time of asking, I've never got to the bottom of it. Partly, obviously, because there'll be a million different answers to the question. Not a million, but there'll be a lot of different answers to the question. But we've never done what we almost always manage to do with every other subject under the sun, which is get some serious amounts of flesh on the bones of the why of it. That what are you doing all day? And the best I've got is an entirely anecdotal and theoretical notion that we're extending adolescence, the combination of lockdowns and slowdowns, lockdowns and slowdowns, and Brexit, of course. There's some interesting stories around today about the damage that's done to sterling and the economy. All of this has created an environment in which kids are kind of spooling out of school with nowhere to go. So they're just carrying on with their lives as they were when they were at school, except the school bit's gone. So still playing video games, still watching telly, still reading books, still, and, you know, eating and sleeping in the same places that you were before, but you've not, where do you go? No possibility of buying your own home for a lot of these people. Do you know how much you need to earn now just to rent a room in London? And I know you're not in London listening to this necessarily, but the figure will blow your socks off. You need a gross annual salary of how many thousand pounds to be in with a chance of renting a room in a shared house in London? I'll tell you after this, and it will give us a perfect way into the question, perhaps, of why many young people just aren't bothering, because what is the point? I better go to the break now, because I'm about to go off on a completely different tangent about the breach of the social contract. What is the point of going to do a job on 25 grand a year when it's not going to touch the sides of your outgoings or your chances of making Yeah, I'm going to go off on that. I'm going to stop. So I'll tell you after this how much you need to be earning a year to rent a room in a shared home, a shared house in London, and then you'll tell me, well, one of a million different things. What are these young people doing all day? Have they given up? And is that fair enough? Do we send too many young people to university? Is a graduate degree no longer something that guarantees you advancement or guarantees you enhancement? And almost certainly I'll have come up with another question by the time you finish listening to this.
LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Play Set for Life from the National Lottery. Winners get 10K every month for 30 years. You could win on repeat. Set for Life. Play now on the National Lottery app. Terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
So I am I'm upgrading my Anirin Bevan quote that I hit you over the head with all the time about the whole purpose of right-wing politics in the 20th century to encourage poverty to use its political power to keep wealth in power. It's been rather neatly paraphrased in a film I saw last night. As long as he keeps the bad people rich and the good people scared, no one will touch him. I think of all the modern politicians you could say that about. As long as he keeps the bad people rich and the good people scared, no one will touch him. Which is from that philosophy epic, that weighty academic tome known as Batman Begins, the Christopher Nolan film. Education. James is in Cheltenham. James, what made you pick up the phone?
I'm a 27-year-old university, well, not yet graduate in my final year, and I have some quite strong feelings when it comes to young people, education, and the world of work, and sort of the opportunities that are or not there for us.
Do you know what I was about to do? I'm such a git. I was about to tick you off for being too vague and covering too much territory, as if I'd completely forgotten the 20-minute introduction that I just inflicted on everybody, which makes you already look like a paragon of clarity and laser-like focus. So you say what you want, James, seriously.
I truly believe that it's a mixture, that there are opportunities that are out there, but generally a lot of graduate level jobs will ask for X amount of years of experience plus the degree. The reason I've gone back to get my finance degree is you cannot graduate from a 3-year degree, a 4-year degree with a master's or whatever it may be with 5 years experience.
And that's really what, because I mean, that sounds unfeasible. As well as impractical, because there aren't enough years in your life. The average graduate is graduating 3-4 years younger than you are now, so it would be physically and, you know, temporally impossible for them to have accrued experience. But in your experience, they're asking for cake and eating it at the same time, the employers.
Yes.
So this is graduate-level jobs, which you wouldn't have been applying for because you weren't a graduate.
No. However, I looked then at entry-level positions, or what are billed as entry-level positions, and for a lot of them, they say, well, we would like the degree, and we want the experience. In my mind, that is not what you would consider entry-level. If someone says, I'm willing to learn, work the job, and work hard, then that should be your character sort of interview. Obviously, it has to be a fit to the company. You can't say, we want the experience, we want the education, we want all of this just to get into the world of work on the entry level.
And that's where we are now, though. And I don't know why that is, whether it is because too many people have degrees. I hope not, because obviously you've made the decision to join those throngs. Can you talk me briefly through what happened when you left school? What and how you got to the point where you thought, I'm going back into full-time education?
Yeah, absolutely. So I did my GCSEs, did my A-levels. In all admittance, I wasn't a fantastic student at 18. I preferred to go off and work. Worked as a lifeguard, worked as a swimming teacher. And thought, you know what, I prefer a practical route. Went and did an apprenticeship in accountancy.
Okay.
Rapidly realised that it wasn't, at that time, that environment wasn't right for me. Went back into swim teaching. The lockdown pandemic hit. I thought, right, I'm going to join the military.
Okay, gosh.
Applied.
Well, no one could accuse you of not being driven, could they?
I would hope not. I've been working since I was 14 years old.
Yeah.
Military itself wasn't for me. Got into there, actually got injured and had to leave rather rapidly.
Okay.
And upon leaving, thought, I'm not entirely certain what to do. Went and worked in a bank for a year. Worked along the finance route. I've always been good with numbers. I then realised that it is more of a retail position than it is a finance position.
And if you want to get a finance position, you're going to have to get a degree.
And if you want a finance position, you need to get a degree.
And that's what you're doing now.
Yep.
Can I be a little bit robust?
Yeah, of course.
So I'm tracking generational difference this morning, and I'm doing so from an incredibly biased perspective of being 53. And you're doing it from an incredibly biased perspective of being 27. You'll never know what it was like to be me when I was 27, and I'll never know what it's like to be you today. But the phrase, "it wasn't for me," popped up two or three times in that conversation.
Yep.
And if I'm looking for things that are different between our generations, and the pandemic is a crucial part of it because it kind of robbed us all of certainty, didn't it? It kind of took away the notion that the world was a predictable place. At its very root, it might be tricky at times, but it was basically predictable. The sun would come up tomorrow, metaphorically speaking. And then, of course, the pandemic's taught us that it doesn't necessarily. But I wonder whether this sense, this is why I'm conscious of choosing my words very sensitively, this sense of picking and choosing is a luxury to my generation, and it's not a luxury to yours, even though my generation is likely to earn more than your generation ever will. You just sort of thought, I want to feel, I really want to, I don't want to, I don't know how familiar you are with the works of Ray Davis and the Kinks, but the idea of getting stuck into the daily grind of walking over the bridge every day to work and feeling that you were serving time or treading water until retirement, that's not for you, is it?
No. Now, I, interestingly enough, post having gone through various changes, I actually did a small amount of therapy.
Right.
And I actually do agree with you. There is something that was said to me, and I think it's very, very relevant, which is that, and I believe it is said to my generation and the generations younger to me, the reality and truth is that not all doors are open to all people.
Yeah.
That is, it's a harsh truth, but it is an objective truth. And I believe my generation, a little bit older than me, and those younger than me, have been told for many, many years, you can be whatever you want to be. You can do whatever you want to do. So rather than, I need to work to earn X amount of money, I need to do this. My dad's phrase that he says quite often is, what's the worst job you can imagine? Well, if you're not doing that, you're doing all right.
Yeah.
And I believe that a lot of people that are my age and younger will say, no, but that's not what I want to do. And as you say, they...
But that's what you sounded like. This is why I was conscious of wanting to be sensitive. You sound like that you're holding out for the dream, as it were, the dream ticket. Whereas I think most of us thought the opposite. I think I'm rejecting your generational divide in that, you know, I was probably 6 months away from taking a traineeship that I didn't really want to do for the rest of my life, but I needed to do something. That sense that you need to do something is perhaps missing. That's the thing that confuses me the most.
Yes. So this is the amount of therapy that I did was post changing around. Started my degree.
Oh, okay. Got it. So yes, so that's helped crystallize some of the things that we've discussed together. I want to try and squeeze in one more call before the news if I can, James. It's the only reason I'm moving on, but that was a perfect start. I just feel some of my ideas beginning to, as I say, crystallize while James was talking, and that sense perhaps of, if I can't, you see, again, I don't want to sound unkind, so I'll shut up and ask Dan in Bromley what he wants to say. Dan, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, mate. We've had this conversation before, James. I think
don't say that. It makes the show sound predictable. Flipping out. No, who let you on? Stick a note
I've
on
also,
him.
I've also spoken to Tom Swarbrick about it as well. I'm quite passionate about it. I think the education system's flawed once we get to GCSE level. In the fact that I believe, and I've got teacher friends that agree with me, that they're trained, that kids are taught to pass exams, not to build pathways.
I don't know that. I mean, my cohort shifted from O-levels to GCSEs, and the whole point of GCSEs was to offer up a much broader education than just pursuing exam results. So GCSE grade is not an exam result.
My point is, I've been a strong advocate for this for many years, is that things like trades and skills that can be taken into a career path are not really taught. So, you know, I've got two stepdaughters that both got accepted places in university but turned it down because they wanted to get into working life. My son has always been not academic, more with his hands, and he's ended up going into construction. But what I'm saying is, if we taught kids from, what's GCSE, 14 up, you know, plumbing, electrics, bricklaying, all those sort of construction industry pathways, they can leave school at the end of the GCSEs, not fully qualified, but with a very, very good broad knowledge, be earning and learning and playing back into the society and building their career pathway, rather than just, you know, I don't think kids are identified that their skills at an early age. I genuinely believe that if
the problem with that, and it's quite a big problem, is that it's too young to go vocational. Like, do it alongside what they're currently doing. Increase, and it used to be the case that you could do woodwork, maybe not bricklaying, but there'd be more manual skills or manual-based skills that you could do. But you can't trust a 14-year-old to sign up at that age to whatever it is that they think they want to be doing when they're 34. I've got family members that did construction training instead of A-levels, actually. So the opportunity does exist to do what you describe. And a lot of their cohort either dropped out or realised when they got on sites that it wasn't what they wanted to do at all. So there's definitely something in what you say, but it's not... I don't think it's the magic bullet that we're looking for. And, of course, there's huge vacancies across not just those trades, but the training schemes as well, as we've discussed before on the programme. 10:31 is the time. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
Israeli officials say one of four bodies handed over by Hamas in Gaza does not belong to a hostage. It means the remains of 21 captives are yet to be transferred as part of the US-brokered ceasefire deal. Vets could soon be forced to publish price lists and put a cap on prescription costs. The Competition and Markets Authority has warned many pet owners are overpaying for medicines. More than 730 police officers were sacked and barred from returning to the service in England and Wales last year. The College of Policing says that's up by almost a quarter on the previous 12 months. LBC weather, another largely cloudy day with outbreaks of light rains and brighter spells in Scotland, Wales and Western England, a high of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Our customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
You've stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
You have 30 seconds to defuse a bomb. But it isn't any bomb. It's a chemical weapon filled with poisonous gas planted by a serial killer. You need quiet. But your ears never stop ringing. You haven't slept properly in months.
Oh, God.
You're on the edge. And you've only got 3 seconds left. Trigger Point. Returns October 26 on ITV1 and ITVX. Hold your breath.
At
Lidl, we value the variety of life. It's why we're introducing four for £2 on eight Lidl bakery favourites with Lidl Black. You can mix your twist with your turnovers, create a croissant supergroup, or just nab a whole bag of pecan plats. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, GB only, 18 plus, terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LBTV.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
26 minutes to 11. And of course, the question of whether or not we're sending too many people to university is one that I, as someone who went to university and expects my children to, not as much as I would have done 20 or 30 years ago, I've got to be honest, but listening to James in Cheltenham describe why he realised a little bit later in life that he needed to, having decided not to originally, you kind of realise how tough it must be. And this is another thing I've not nailed with you before. I've tried and I've failed. And when we fail, it's my fault. There's been one show in the last 3 months where the first two callers were a bit rubbish, which was my fault entirely. And then it picked up a bit. It picked up a lot, actually, by the end of the hour. But it means I'm getting the question wrong, or I'm not getting the emphasis right. Or it means there is no answer to the question that I'm asking. But this idea that young people have it harder than ever is so at odds with our kind of rhetorical evolution, isn't it, as British people. We're supposed to believe that, you know, they have it easy. Everything was much harder in my day. It runs through us like Blackpool through a stick of rock. I've caught myself. I've pointed it out to you when I suffer from an unexpected bout of in-my-day-itis. I don't think I did it with James a moment ago when I suggested that, you know, we felt we had to get onto a rail. And if we couldn't get onto a rail, then we'd have to find a new rail to get. If we couldn't get onto the rails that we wanted to get onto, we'd have to get onto some other rails pretty quickly. And that overlooks the fact that we could expect a relatively decent level of reward once we were on those rails. So even if you were not lucky enough to do a job that you'd do for nothing, or to do a job that you'd do as a hobby if you didn't have it as a job, which has got to be the dream for everybody. I try not to sound smug. But even if you didn't get that, then, and you were doing something that, you know, the kind of job that Ray Davies used to sing about in the Kinks, you knew that you'd have a mortgage, or you knew that you'd have a nice retirement, or you knew that you'd have a nice place. You were working towards something. There was a cartoon in Viz years ago. Still brilliant, Viz, by the way. And sort of nowhere near as popular as it used to be, but it's still absolutely brilliant. And, I can't remember the name of the artist and the writer. I think it's Barney and Lee, but I can't remember their surnames. And it was just a short strip, like an old Andy Capp strip, of a kid on a tram or a train on a 0 hours contract. And I think things have actually got a bit better since then, but this is the foundations of the generation that we're talking about. And you'd be on your way to work, and then you'd be told that you weren't needed today, and then you'd come back again. And that is the kind of thing that trades unions were invented to abolish. And they had largely succeeded. You know, the idea that you'd stand on the dock in Liverpool hoping that you'd get a wage that day because the foreman was going to tap a few people on the head and send everybody else home. That's what a zero-hour contract is in many ways. If you're on it reluctantly, some people, of course, enjoy that flexibility. But that bit there is a huge reversal of what my generation or your generation expected from the relationship with work. And it's kind of, for a lot of people, gone back. And even if you're not a zero-hours contract, you need, and I forgot to tell you this, as is my wont on this program, £40,000. It is estimated in research published today, £40,000 gross salary to rent a room in London. So if you're listening to this in London and you've got somebody upstairs or sitting next to you or in the kitchen who falls into the category of 18 to 25-year-olds who aren't doing a great deal with their life at the moment, if there's any mystery as to why, then that is a large part of the answer. I can't get a job that pays 40 grand. If I can't get a job that pays 40 grand, I can't move out of home. If I can't move out of home, what's the point of doing the job? Tenants now need to earn around £40,000 to afford a room in London as young people are increasingly priced out of the capital. You're looking at just shy of a grand a month. which means you need to be earning about, well, just shy of 40 grand a year in order for the rent to be affordable. You're looking at about 30% or less of a worker's income to be spent on housing for it to be considered affordable. So you see these people and you judge them by the standards of your own era. Well, I took a job. I was going to get... I think you've heard me say somewhat idiotically that as if it would be a fate worse than death to have stayed in retail. I'm getting turned down repeatedly for jobs in journalism. I'd like more times than I care to remember. And then a traineeship came up, a graduate traineeship in the retail empire that I worked in came up. And I quite fancied it because I'd kind of given up on journalism. But it would have been a wrench. And yet that was a great job with great terms and conditions and a car, you know. Where's that offer now for the kids that we're talking about today? I don't know is the short answer. Two, you wait ages for a call from Cheltenham and then two come along at once. Andy is also there. Andy, what made you pick up the phone?
Yeah, good morning, James. I'm a late adopter to your programme, and I've had to say, thoroughly enjoy it.
Thank you.
Although you often leave me feeling very angry by the end of the morning.
Yeah, well, that's but, the world, that's I hope. And that's not me. That's the world we live in, I think. But anyway.
I broadly agree with you on all points. Yeah, so I'm a freelance careers advisor. I should have retired, but I like the job too much because I'm committed to helping young people make informed decisions. But also my last full-time job, I had the horrible job title of Case Responsible Officer NEET, which meant that I chased young NEET people around the county of Gloucestershire.
Not literally.
sometimes, yes.
Well, I've got at least 5 or 6 minutes with you, so allow me to pick your brains and then return to why. Cause so can you, is there a broad brush answer to the question of what they're doing all day?
Right. I think they are in a sense, in a state of inertia. And I think it stems all the way back to a lack of informed decision making in schools. And I don't want to be critical of schools per se, because many of them do a good job of supporting young people on all fronts. But there is an overemphasis, certainly, on higher education. Particularly, I've worked in all sorts of schools, including grammar schools. As you might imagine, grammar schools...
Very aspirational.
...see their raison d'etre to propel young people to university, often at the neglect of other options, and I'm thinking particularly apprenticeship.
Well, it's the only thing they boast about.
Yeah, well, it is, and it's the only thing they're often measured on.
Yeah.
I was fortunate to work for a grammar school who had a much broader perspective because they recognised there was a growing anxiety amongst even their students.
So inertia is the thing that a large number of these young people have in common. And that's what we've described. That's what I mean when I talk about the cogs turning but not meshing. They don't see the point in engaging with the world of work because it's not going to take them anywhere.
No, but also, and I'm very passionate about this subject, I think... Very generally, and the employers have to take some of the responsibility here. There is a woeful lack of genuine work experience opportunity to place people in if you like, a situation of being informed about opportunities and what the world of work can offer them. So many young people reach the age of 18, having stayed on the escalator of education, with little to no genuine experience of life beyond potentially a part-time job. I think we need to do better in terms of employers engaging with schools and move away from the model of work experience we've had in the past.
And what changed over the course of your pre-retirement career? What were the big changes that explain some of the things you've just described to us?
Well, I joined the career service when it was firmly a local authority responsibility, and then it progressively dwindled to little, along with many other services that county councils used to run. So there was complete, I think, withdrawal of careers guidance in school for a period.
What an insane thing to do, though. Who presided over that?
Well, we had the Wonderful Connections experiment, which...
Remind me what that was.
The Connections experiment was really a unifying of young people facing services, which targeted the most disengaged and, let's face it, troublesome teenagers. But in the process, a universal service that had applied to everyone in schools was then very piecemeal. So I think you had that. You also had a crowded timetable in schools, which meant that careers education dropped off the agenda. And
what year are we in now, roughly? Where are we now?
You're testing my history knowledge, but we're talking about... It probably was in progress before, but certainly the early noughties onwards.
Right, okay.
But also schools struggling to find time to... and employers to support work experience. And then, of course, we have COVID and any progress that might have been made stopped dead. So for all the reasons we've heard today in terms of isolation, you have young people, again...
The word inertia is underpinning everything that you're saying. Briefly, Andy, just respond to David, who's been in touch. And just for the record, first person in his family to go to university, got his first degree from Liverpool, subsequently got a PhD from Cambridge, and he hates these discussions for the same reason I do. And how do you respond to this claim that it sounds like, quotes, we don't want those plebs going to university, because the kind of people who advocate for apprenticeships are not the kind of people who would ordinarily expect their children to be going to university, their own children to be doing the apprenticeships. Certainly in politics and media, the people banging on about apprenticeships would still be wanting their own children to go to university. So how do you insulate what you've said from the accusation of closing avenues and paths for less privileged people?
If I've understood your question, as I think I have, there's a pathway for everyone, and I think everyone has to make their own judgment about what's right for them. But I am a first graduate in my own family. I went many years ago to a polytechnic. We don't have them anymore, of course, but that opportunity was one I'm very grateful for. Higher education is about far more than preparing for the world of work. It certainly... rounded me, I'd like to think.
So have we got a Victorian hangover here then? Or no, it's not a Victorian, it's a sort of post-war hangover where we judge the jobs that we place the highest values on increasingly don't exist, and yet we're still schooling children as if they're the jobs they should be aiming for. There's a couple of texts which I could paraphrase saying not everybody wants to be a bloody plumber. And we've done phone-ins about how back-breaking work on building sites can be. So it is a little bit naive to suggest that very few people in that line of work want their own children to follow them into it because of the sheer physical strain of it. Not for every body in that world, and it's highly skilled work as well. But the idea of being warm and dry used to be something to aim for the children of people whose jobs didn't allow them to be warm and dry. And we haven't found the third way yet between those two positions because the jobs probably don't exist. And yet we're legislating for a world in which they did. That's part of the problem. Andy, that was really helpful. Great calls today. 10:47 is the time.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m.
Now, I tend to take the view that asylum claims for people who have committed crimes in this country, I think your claim is null and void. There isn't a need to protect you, I don't think. Or this country shouldn't feel the need to protect you.
Tom Swarbrick, with cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions, built for businesses. LBC.
The world is vast, offering endless possibilities. But Claire's world has only been getting smaller. She doesn't leave the country. She barely leaves the house. Still traumatized by that roadside bomb in Iraq. More than 20 years ago. For many, the battle continues. Combat Stress provides intensive mental health treatment to UK veterans with complex mental health problems, helping them rediscover the world they once knew. Combat Stress, for veterans' mental health. Search Combat Stress to support our work.
Where does Tesco source its award-winning finest Chianti from? Well, it doesn't just come from any old winery. It comes from one of the oldest in the whole of Tuscany. We travel far and wide to source wines that we know you'll love. Mmm, yes, that's another award winner. It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Tesco, every little helps. Drinkware 18 plus available in the majority of larger stores.
Imagine a delicious patty nestled between two buns with cheese and ketchup. It's not a burger. That patty is actually sausage, which makes this a sandwich. A breakfast sausage sandwich. The new $1.99 sausage sandwich from McDonald's. Made with RSPCA assured pork. Until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery. Subject to availability.
I'm telling you, raise taxes. That's how.
Cut spending. Less waste. More sense.
Move north. Get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
Your daily life often goes like this. With Air France, choose instead. Wow. Until the 21st of October, put your daily life on hold. Take advantage of Air France moments and book your flight to Beijing from £499, flying from London Heathrow via Paris. Return including tax. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
10:50 is the time. Evidence, if it were needed, of how distorting your own age can be when discussing matters educational. So, and you know, the further you are away from the here and now, from being educated. There's a good phrase. Do you know that Gary and Phil Neville's dad was called Neville? Did you know that? Isn't that fantastic? Today's programme is sponsored by Breville. I've fallen into that trap here because I said earlier about GCSEs replacing O-levels and making it a more rounded education with coursework, but this messenger reminds me that Michael Gove reversed a lot of that. But turn them back into final exam subjects. So no more coursework or redrafting, no more project work, no more presentations, just a sort of speed writing test to see how many facts or how many words you could cram onto a page in the space of 2 hours. So that might be quite relevant to this. And this is heartbreakingly relevant from John. My heart bleeds for young people in their 20s trying to find employment today. My daughter left UCL with a good degree and has been applying for nearly 1,000 jobs over the past 3 years. She's a bright, articulate, sparkling individual with a wonderful personality and character, but has had the door slammed in her face on so many occasions that her personality has begun to become disenfranchised. The way people are selected today is completely down to an algorithm. I would suggest that very few humans read applications from individuals. She's come to a point where she's applying for internships, yet meets the catch-22 of not having the experience to become an intern. That's what James was touching on in the first call of this hour. How on earth can she gain experience without being offered it? The whole situation is broken. Her student debt with interest is now well over £100,000. She sees no future in her personal, social or professional life, and this crucifies me. And it crucifies me as well, because I can't think of anything comforting or encouraging to say to you. And yet I can feel your pain from here. And there are quite a few people in similar situations. But, of course, there are people who are not, who did get those jobs. And what it is they have done, I do not know. But it doesn't actually matter. Because if you've got 10 people going for 100 jobs, the story is about the 90 people who haven't got one. And yet the only story we ever tell is about the 10 people who did. That's the problem, right? I don't know how you change that. I find myself thinking increasingly between 10 and 1 every day on LBC that we are pointing out things that would change the world if only everybody else pointed them out as well. But the problem is with the people not getting the jobs. And however successful your little boy has been or my little boy has been, it doesn't change the fact that John's little girl is in purgatory. And so are a million other kids. Tavis is in Aberdeen. Tavis, what made you pick up the phone?
Yeah, g'day, James.
Hello,
mate. I guessed your figure for London.
Did you?
Well, yeah, I guess my
that's why you're in Aberdeen. That's why you're in Aberdeen, mate.
Indeed. You got it in one, buddy. You got it in one. Yeah, I mean, the calibre of calls have been incredible this morning to the young gent at the start talking about the need for training, the guy next about better vocational in schools. I come at this from multiple layers. I'm a professional educator and researcher, and have trained a lot of young folk in the mid-20s into careers in the environmental sector.
Okay.
I'm a home educator with a teenage son.
Oh, right.
In parallel, in full time to that, which I see many of the concerns about future prospects and how we engage them through our personal kind of pedagogy and teaching at home. And I come at it from, I kind of did the same thing when I was young, picking one of those crazy degrees, and luckily it worked out for me quite well. So, you know, there's so many aspects to this, isn't there?
There is, and you're the first person to mention luck, which is probably the single most significant factor in all of this, whether it's luck of birth, luck of education, luck of opportunity, contacts, connections, all of the things that have always been true, seem to be truer than ever before, don't they?
Luck is a part of it, for sure, yeah.
Are the young people you've taught, the fact that they were aware of environmental science as a viable future puts them in a privileged cohort as well, because, you know, there'll be families and schools where it doesn't even appear on the
and
horizon.
And I'm actually passionate about that with getting into schools. I've done, you know, board games in primary schools and talks and field trips and stuff at all levels. And I think you've got to encourage a diversity, different types of careers. Environmental sector is the second fastest growing sector in the UK behind AI and digital.
Is it?
It is. And then it doubled in employment advertisements in 12 months. It's about 5% now of the entire advertisements in the economy and growing rapidly. So it's just one option. And the good thing about, I think, that sector is that there are opportunities from vocational all the way through to higher education, all the way through the spectrum. We need to build the wind farms. We need to build the electricity grids and the systems. We need people in nature recovery. We need people in marketing and construction.
This is so interesting, isn't it? Because the media narrative and much of the political narrative is the polar opposite of the reality that you're describing, isn't it?
I get it every day. It's bonkers.
Yeah, and it's not, it is not reflected by the simple reality that you describe. I mean, this is a growth, and it has to continue to be a growth. Even if we get some idiot politician in this country who presses the reverse button, the world will carry on embracing what you're describing.
Exactly. The world
even
will
if Donald
on.
Trump is spouting drill, baby, drill, the world you inhabit doesn't change. Yeah. And it just continues to grow. But as long as he keeps the bad people rich and the good people scared, no one will touch him.
Well, I'm certainly at the epicenter of that being in Aberdeen, but that's another story for another time and another discussion. I'm happy to have you.
And how worried are you about your boy, what he does next? Because even with a dad as informed as you and as plugged in as you, there are no guarantees in this world.
No, especially when he wants to be a deep sea marine biologist.
Okay. It leaves a lot of room for disappointment, doesn't it? Because it's such a specific dream. It's such a specific ambition. But at least it's a target he can aim for.
I think you've got to keep the passion for whatever it is that motivates you as an individual. But you've also got to have flexible ways of getting there through. We'll take probably a skills route and the joined up degree and vocational kind of pathway that you can do. That's an option for in the world that I inhabit. You know, you can do a vocational course at college in nature restoration or engineering, or we desperately need for welders and sparkies building wind farms. Or you could go into more design, science, creativity aspects, more critical aspects, you know, engineering aspects, advanced manufacturing aspects. You need a degree to go into those areas. But all the options are open. We've just got to connect the youth market, which I'm really concerned about, with the opportunities in the right places.
That's exactly it. And that is why the inertia and opportunity are not happy bedfellows, are they? And inertia is not a lifestyle choice. Inertia is something that is thrust upon them. You know, when you think of John's daughter, she is heading towards inertia. She is giving up after 3 years of having doors slammed in her faces. And what you're describing is opportunities that they may not be aware of. And by the time you're leaving school or leaving university, it may be too late to go down some of the paths you've described, unless you do what James does. What James did, the caller you referred to at the beginning of your contribution, which is to recalibrate in your late 20s and think, do you know what, I'm going to go off and retrain. And that, of course, involves taking on quite large amounts of debt. Although it is quite manageable debt in the context of other credits, other debts. It's different from what they do in Australia, for example, where I think you have a graduate tax rather than a student loan, which probably, on one level at least, makes more sense. And speaking of other country comparisons, which is something we don't do enough of in this country, let alone on this programme, No Hostages reminds me that 60% of young people in Ireland go to university or get degrees, and the economy is thriving and exports are soaring. Trying to blame Britain's economic woes on too many plebs, their word not mine, going to university is the academic version of the idea that the financial crash was caused by too many libraries in Wolverhampton. I'm minded to do something a little lighter next. I'm sure you are as well.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, Israeli officials say one of four bodies handed over by Hamas in Gaza does not match any of the hostages. It means the remains of 21 captives are yet to be transferred as part of the ceasefire deal brokered by Donald Trump. Israel has threatened to restrict aid into Gaza in response to delays in their return. Mr. Trump's warned Hamas that it must meet its commitments.
They misrepresented because we were told they had 26, 24 of dead hostages, if we can use those terms. And it seems as though they don't have that because we're talking about a much lesser number. But that's a very tough subject. I want them back. That's what they said. I want them back.
Vets could be forced to publish price lists following an investigation by the competition watchdog. The Competition and Markets Authority has warned many pet owners are also overpaying for prescription medicines. It's proposed sweeping changes to make the sector fairer. The number of officers sacked and barred from policing in England and Wales has risen by a quarter in the past year. LBC's Tom Harrigan has more details.
Police forces across the country have been under increasing pressure to root out officers bringing them into disrepute. And these figures from the College of Policing suggest progress is being made. 735 officers were put on the barred list in the year to March, up from just under 600 over the previous 12 months. The most common reason for dismissal was dishonesty, but others were thrown out for child sex offences, domestic abuse and drugs.
There are growing concerns about the growth of music created by artificial intelligence on streaming platforms. Experts say it is flooding some services, prompting calls for AI-generated content to be highlighted to listeners. Dame Caroline Dynage is chair of the Culture, Media and Sports Committee. She's told to LBC that musicians' incomes are at risk if AI music isn't clearly identified.
They have a responsibility to go over and above and to really to demonstrate to their users what it is that they're hearing, what it is that they're listening to, without the user having to sort of go digging to find that information.
The outsourcing company Capita has been fined £14 million over a data breach. The ICO watchdog says the firm failed to protect personal information after the cyber attack in 2023. Hackers stole data belonging to 6.6 million people. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 94.19. That's down 19 points. The pound buys $1.33 and a €1.14. LBC weather, most places quite grey with some light showers, brighter spells in Scotland, Wales and Western England. And a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 11. Do you want to do a quick missing word round? It might be a bit obvious, this one, but it's quite funny, a bit cheeky, relevant to some of the things I touched upon in the last hour, kind of. Should we do this one? Let's do this one. We don't have a jingle for the missing word round. I probably asked for one, but you know how long it takes for me to get anything around here. Unlike the news agents, honestly, they ask for something on a Monday, they get it the previous Friday. It's incredible. Cannabis helps cancer patients gain weight by causing blank. Cannabis helps cancer patients gain weight by causing blank. See how you go on with that one. Well, we turn our attention next to a story that you just heard in your news bulletin. We are returning to the Middle East today. We will be talking to Noga Tarnopolsky, on whom we have relied very heavily for coverage of events in Israel and Gaza. She, as you know, is a freelance reporter in Jerusalem and joins us to bring us up to speed with how the developments of this week this weekend have landed on the ground in Israel. And the coverage, I'm afraid, here is still suboptimal, shall we say, for whatever reason, whether it's because journalists still can't get into Gaza or whether it's just because tradition. But did you know that Netanyahu is in court today? Did you know that? Have you seen that anywhere? You probably know that they have stopped aid getting into Gaza and that Hamas terrorists are now murdering some of their political rivals in the streets in the Gaza Strip. Both of those stories, quite rightly, receiving widespread coverage and suggesting that the ceasefire we've all been celebrating, or reminding us that the ceasefire we've all been celebrating, is fragile, but the prevention of aid getting into the Gaza Strip because the return of dead hostages is not proceeding as quickly as the Israeli administration would like seems to me to be a profoundly worrying development. Hamas are Hamasing. And that's profoundly worrying as well, because the idea of them disarming or waltzing off into the sunset appears to be diminishing daily. But anyway, Noga will bring us up to date with all of that. And also, I'm going to introduce you after PMQs, which is back. Let Joy be unconfined, or at least let Natasha be unconfined. She'll be joining me just before 12 o'clock to tee up the first PMQs in what feels like a very long time. I just need to check something with the producer. Could you talk among yourselves for a moment? Is that okay? Is Kemi Badenoch still leader of the opposition? Okay. Yeah, Kemi Badenoch, of course, is still leader of the opposition, and she will be... And, of course, she gets better every week at this. She's been on fire lately, telling the people of Northern Ireland, of course, that they voted to leave the European Union and various other examples of how true it was when she said that she never commits gaffes. We will be talking about AI, because so much of our conversation lately has hinged upon the idea that its progress is unstoppable and that it's going to change the world. Bank of England experts and others warning that there is a big bubble bursting potentially, and it's something we need to find out more about, which is indeed what we will do at about 12:30 or shortly after the 12:30 news bulletin today. But what we're going to do now is a story that I could have done with you on any day in the last 3 months. You know that I overshare with you. You know far too much about me than is healthy. It's just the way I'm made. My mum's the same. My favourite bit is when I get someone in Idiot's Corner telling me something about myself that they only know because I've told them. So, you know, it's like we had fertility treatment because my sperm was profoundly unimpressive. There wasn't much of it, and what I did have was doing the backstroke. So I'm quite comfortable about that. Some of the best messages I get are from men that I've helped deal with. I got one this very week, actually. He sent me a picture of his newborn little boy and thanked me for talking about it so openly and so frankly. But you get some poor soul in Idiot's Corner going, oh, well, you're firing blanks. And I'm going to go, oh, no, you've cut me to the quick by telling me something that you only know because I told you. Or public school. Someone will go, well, you went to public. I bet you're not mentioning that you went to public school. I go, how do you know I went to public school, you prune? Because I told you. So it's not a very good way. Find out something I don't want people to know, and then you might actually have an ability of landing a punch on me and staying out of Idiot's Corner and going instead into Successful Troll Corner. But I don't want you to know how much we've spent on our dog this year, because I'm embarrassed. And luckily, I'm not going to overshare because I don't know. Mrs. O'Brien has not told me because I don't want to know how much we have spent on our dog this year. I don't think I'm going to have to write another book. It's not quite that much. But we moved house a few years ago and I had to write a book in order to pay for a new roof. So I just... I got a vague idea. Right, it's in the thousands. And I don't quite get it. I got to be honest with you. You take the dog to the vet and they say, oh, because he's got a poorly leg. Give it a couple of days, still got a poorly leg. So it's not just bruised or being bitten. It's not, he's walking around on three legs. Take it to the vet, have an x-ray, 500 quid. What? 500 quid. And so immediately I start thinking, how long does it take? It's about 20 minutes. So how many can they do in an 8-hour day? Say they're doing 3 an hour, let's say 2 to be generous. That's £1,000 an hour. Eight grand. Just on the x-rays. And it's chock-a-blocker because, you know, if you need an appointment, you can't just fit you in. You'll give you an appointment a few days hence. Say 2.5 an hour, let's say. 2.5 x-rays an hour. That's 500, 750 quid. 8 hours, 4, 3 grand. So 12 grand. 12 grand. How can that be? I don't know if you've ever heard the phone-ins we've done about funerals. Right, but there's something about funerals and undertakers in particular that everybody knows, but nobody ever says out loud. So some of the most entertaining, and I know that sounds odd given the morbid nature of the territory, some of the most entertaining conversations we've had regarding undertakers and funerals have been with people who haggle. Because it's against our sensibilities, right? You want the very best for your lost loved one. Unless, of course, you hated them, which is a conversation we've never had on the programme, actually. Well, booking a funeral for a parent that you really didn't like. But generally speaking, you want what's best for your nan, right? Or you want what's best for your dad. So you go to the undertakers and you begin to feel a little bit of guilt that you've sort of turned down the brass knobs that are going to go through, you know, they're either going to be buried in the ground or go into the crematorium, or they're going to get screwed off. I don't want to cast aspersions upon the undertakers. Taking trade, they're going to get unscrewed and sold to someone else for the same price. So you've got that little bit of guilt. So very, very few people sit in a undertaker's office and haggle. So, well, I'll give you 50 quid for the brass knobs if you chuck in a wreath for free or something like that. You know, the way that you might approach buying a new car or something like that. You're never going to do that at a funeral. I think we've got the same problem with the vets, you see. So I get some information about how much it's cost to fix our little dog's leg. And if I tell you that I googled amputation, you'll get an idea of what my relationship with the costs was, right? And I don't know the full figure, and I never will, and I don't want to. All good marriages have one or two secrets, and the amount of money we spent on fixing our dog's leg is probably the biggest, well, as far as I'm aware, that's the biggest secret in our marriage, but that's only because I don't want to know. I don't want to know. And when I find out the little costs, or you've got to get some tablets, you know, you've got to get a prescription from the vets, and you can't quite believe how much it costs, because you pay for your own prescriptions as a human, and they're a fraction of the cost of what you're paying to get your dogs. And the reason I mention undertakers is because of the issue of monopoly. Because of the issue of monopoly. Not the game, you idiot. The idea that you can't shop around. You go to the vets. You signed up with a vet. It's a bit like being signed up with a GP, right? So you go to the vet with your poorly dog, with its gammy leg, and the vet says, okay, that'll be, we can fix this. She's going to have an operation. That'll be £6,000, for example. And you go, Nick had a caller earlier, paid £6,000 to have his dog's leg done. That'll be £6,000. And you go, don't be ridiculous, it's a dog. Come off it. Also, it's, you know, I know, look, you probably need some fancy machines and stuff. But goodness me, mate, my hourly rate is pretty good, all right? I'm doing okay. I'm in the 0.whatever%. But if you're charging £6,000 to stitch up a dog and it's all done in less than an hour, you're going to be richer than Croesus. You might as well be running Goldman Sachs on that. Oh, yes, but I've got to pay for a nurse, and I've got to pay for a bed, and I've got to pay for... And we're going to stable her overnight, and I'm... Well, so what? That's a cage. You're charging more than Claridge's for sticking a dog in a cage. It's got 30 other dogs in cages in it. Where does all the bloody money go? Where does it go? And I don't know. So, as I read today, that vets should be forced to publish price lists so pet owners can see costs up front and shop around for the best deal. Am I receiving conclusive proof that my worst fears are correct? And we've almost all been rinsed when we are handing over huge sums of cash to veterinary surgeons and their colleagues for doing things that actually cost a fraction of what they charge. Question number one, 0345 6060973. How can it cost 500 quid for this texter to have a cat's tooth extracted? 500 quid to have a cat's tooth extracted. I mean, what do you need? A pair of pliers and a painkiller. Extraordinary sums. I mean, truly extraordinary sums. So, who's going to win? I'm such a really awful sometimes. I'm now keen to discourage you from ringing in because I don't want caller after caller after caller. It's a heck of a lot more interesting than people ringing in with human ailments. Why is that? You know, I always say that this job is not judged by how many people you get to ring the program. Because if you want your phones to explode, you just say, is there anybody old out there feeling poorly? Or, who, have I had a parking ticket that wasn't fair? And it goes, boom! So you get young producers joining the company, and they go, oh, that got loads of calls. And you have to say to them sometimes, every single one of them was mind-numbingly dull. So, for reasons I don't understand, I find constant stories about this huge sums of money spent on vets' bills. I don't get bored of those. But if it was humans, I'd be bored after the second one. So I can't discourage you from ringing in, but I do want you to include the question, why do we do it? Why do we do it? What is the alternative? To just say goodbye a little bit sooner than you would otherwise do? Or as I said, and this was an unwise intervention in the conversation with Mrs. O'Brien, you see quite a lot of dogs with three legs, don't you? Down the park. There's always a couple of dogs with three legs down the park. But it turns out that costs almost as much as the operation to fix the leg in the first place. And again, without wanting to be crass, you kind of find yourself going, how much can that cost? How can it cost? Say it's £6,000 to have the operation, £4,000 to have an amputee. £4,000 to chop a dog's leg off. How can that even be? 0345 6060973. Imagine someone who's just tuned in, expecting a little bit more coverage of the Middle East, which we've been doing all week. What's he just said? £4,000 to chop a dog's leg off? How can that even be? 0345 6060973. It's ridiculous. And I'm going to tell you something. Our insurance didn't cover it. I can't remember why. It was some sort of inherited condition or something like that. We've got one of those ridiculous dogs with a stupid name. Sort of fancy pants crossbreed from about 10 years ago, before it was even cool. And I love her. Don't get me wrong. I love her. You listen to this show 10 years ago, before I got a dog, you'd hear me say things like, I don't understand what all the fuss is about. If you died on your sofa, it would be eating you by tea time. And I used to mean it. I used to mock people who, for example, wanted their dog's ashes to be put in the coffin with them when they were buried. I used to think that was completely... I kind of get it now. Not as much as my wife does, but I kind of get it now. My texts are off the charts today. Denise has been in touch. 700 quid for killing my rabbit. How can it be 700 quid to kill a rabbit? I'd do it for two. So what is going on here? Is it the biggest scam in plain sight since... I don't know, undertakers. Have you ever met a poor vet? 0345 6060973. Is it something that needs really, really serious regulation, or am I being a hopefully amusing idiot? 0345 6060. And I can't take the dog back to the vet now, can I? It's the problem with having a modest public profile. So you never know who knows who you are and who doesn't. And the vets do. Because they said so. Oh, can I just say how much I enjoy your programme? Well, can I get a discount? Come on a studio tour, seriously, and then do the leg for £3,000. What's going on? It's 18 minutes after 11. And, yeah, it's a funny one, this.
This is LBC. Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m.
I have found completely shocking the extent of the anti-Semitism that people have felt because of what's been going on in the Middle East, emboldened not just to criticise the Israeli government, but to use what is happening in the Middle East as a way of allowing you to expose what you really believe. And I think a lot of people have shown themselves for what they really are.
Tom Swarbrick with cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses. LBC.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays, make money work for you.
Your daily life often goes like this. With Air France, choose instead. Until the 21st of October, put your daily life on hold. Take advantage of Air France moments and book your flight to St. Martin from £679 flying from London Heathrow via Paris. Return including tax. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
So, there aren't many topics where I cannot guess when someone's yanking my chain. Turns out this is one of them. So Jordan is in Devon, right? And Jordan says that they paid 800 quid to have their mouse kept in the vets overnight. And I think he's joking, or she's joking. I think they're joking. But they're not, are they? 800? No, just to keep a mouse? Because it's a mouse. And also, why? Who'd pay 800 quid for a mouse? No, you're yanking my chain, Jordan. Stop it. And then I read another one. We paid 1,000 quid to have our guinea pig. Grace says broken leg. To have a guinea pig's broken leg fixed. 1,000 quid. How much love can you get off a guinea pig? And maybe it's our fault. We're paying it. Actually, turn it on its head. Hey, there's no scam here at all. No one's forcing you to. You could just say goodbye to the animal and save all the money. Although, having said that, it costs 800 quid to kill a rabbit. Are you allowed to finish? Are you allowed to dispatch your own pets to the next? Would the RSPCA get involved if it was euthanasia? If it was like if the vet said, "Sorry, there's nothing I can do." 800 quid to kill it. He says, "It's all right. I'll take it home and do it myself." I don't think I could, actually. Oh, I better take some calls. This is going a bit weird. Grace is in Exeter. Grace, what made you pick up the phone?
Hiya, can you hear me all right?
Loud and clear, Grace.
My mum is a vet. She actually used to run some veterinary practices.
I bet Christmas is great round your house, isn't it?
It's fantastic. Yeah,
I bet it is.
Yeah.
No, I didn't mean the debates. I meant the presents.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not. Not quite.
Go on, tell me.
It's a tricky topic, and I think she has to be very diplomatic with people about it. But I think the thing we always go back to is, if it was human medicine, you'd be paying the same. We're very lucky in this country to have the NHS. But you're paying for what you would pay for a human doctor to do a surgery. They're trained the same. They're actually probably more highly skilled in some ways. Like, trying to do surgery on a guinea pig is a bit harder than doing it on a adult. I think you're paying for like the suture materials, you're paying for the machines, and it's all the same as if it would be for a human.
So because we get all our big operations done on the NHS, we've got no idea how much it's actually costing.
Yeah, basically, yeah. It'd probably be similar.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, it just feels unlikely, doesn't it, that operating on a guinea pig is harder than operating on a human, but I suppose you're right. You need
scalpels. If you try to put a needle in a guinea pig versus a human, it's a lot harder, you know?
I just pray someone turned on their radio at precisely that moment. Just heard you say...
Yeah, sure, mum's listening at work thinking this is hilarious.
You put a needle in a guinea pig. It's obviously much harder than putting a needle in a human. Well, it is if you start thinking about veins and sinews. Yeah. Hang on, I need a comeback on this, don't I? Because it can't be the same. Because it's, you know, you're not, it's not like a massive hospital with loads of overheads. It's usually a high street with a back room full of cages. So the idea that the costs are going to be the same, the NHS has its problem, but we're not stacking people up in five-storey cages yet, are we? And the operations, how many machines do you need to fix a guinea pig's leg?
Well, I couldn't tell you that. I'm not the vet, but,
yeah, all right.
I think you pay for the quality of the service. There's some vets who are cheaper are probably not.
But are they? How do you find the cheaper ones? I don't even know. I've never known anyone to shop around for a vet. I mean, that would be, if I had any phone lines free, I'd encourage people to ring in and tell me what happened when they shopped around. Because when we did this with undertakers, the results were extraordinary.
Yeah, no, well, my mum's had people phone in and say, we found somewhere cheaper, we're going elsewhere.
Yes.
But I think the thing is, people who really, especially small animal vets, you get a lot of patients who are like family members. So you will pay anything to fix
obviously it's not going to be a complete scam, and the points you make about the cost of human operations and the training that vets need are really valid and puncture some of my sillier comments, but the sense that this is way over the odds doesn't go away, not least because it's the watchdog saying that they should be forced to publish price lists so that people can shop around for the best deal. Everybody thinks they're a winner, but I'm getting millions of these. I don't even know what a Malamute is. It's a dog, is it? An Alaskan Malamute. Trevor's got one. He's in Ireland. $10,000 for a hip replacement. They had to fly someone in especially from Switzerland. Okay. I mean, you're paying it, so they're charging it. It's a bit like, how much do you get paid to present a radio programme? Well, they're paying it. I'm taking it. Lee's in Pinner. Lee, what do you reckon?
I've got more angry at this topic than the Middle East. Crazy.
Go on, tell me why.
I'm actually agreeing with you on stuff. This is shocking. This is news.
Well, it comes to us all. It's called maturity, Lee. And welcome to the club.
I'm not mature.
Yes. Go on, tell me your angle on this.
So, I mean, I've had a few pets, but let's talk specifically about my Labrador Florence, and she's the most gorgeous, wonderful dog.
Mm.
As I'm talking about it, I think of everything that happened before. But she had a little growth. They can have like these little fat deposits, apparently, where they need to be taken out. They're just a fatty deposit. Anyway, she had an X-ray. God knows what that cost. And they said, oh, yes, might not be a fatty deposit. It probably needs to be taken out. It could be something worse. They went to take it out. They apparently had problems taking it out, so they weren't sure if it was done properly, so it might need to be done again. And I'm thinking, we've just paid you enough money to
How
do
much
it,
money? I
surely.
Need numbers, Lee.
Oh, that was quite... This is all through insurance, but that was
all right,
at least
cut to the check. Give me the punchline. I've got a $10,000 broken leg over here, and I don't know where
right,
we're
no, going to... I can't beat the $10,000 broken leg.
Well, you might be. It might be a smaller sum of money for an even more ridiculous job. That's
oh,
the other
is,
thing. Go on,
is.
Then. Hit
just
me with
work
it.
With me. Okay,
come
fine.
On.
So she had the operation. She had the procedure, all fine, had it all bandaged up, all fine, and then we were due to go on holiday on the Monday, and the wound was looking, according to my wife, it wasn't looking great. It wasn't healing. She wasn't happy. She was a bit worried. We're going away the next morning, so you can imagine the panic, everything. So she called up the emergency vet.
For
near
God's
us,
sake, man, I thought my monologues were long. Get on with it.
They are long. They
Get
are
on
long.
With it. Get to the end. How we much and what to, was
we,
it?
We showed the photo to the vet. He said, I'm not sure. You better bring her in.
Yeah.
We brought her in. He literally had a look at it, went, that looks fine, shoved a thermometer up her backside, said, everything is good, off you go, £275.
You could have started this call with the bit about the photograph.
Yeah, but I didn't. Yeah, well, I didn't.
No, you didn't. That's true, actually.
I didn't.
Well,
I'm
there
not
it is.
As professional
we
can,
fully,
as you.
We
anyway,
fully agree about it. £275.
And the receptionist looked at me in embarrassment. She looked and went, I'm really sorry. I said, but we were in for literally a minute for him to tell us it's fine, shove the thermometer up her backside.
Yeah. Stop going and on about the thermometer up her backside. It sounds a bit inappropriate. Also, she's not here. She'd be embarrassed if she could hear you talking about her like that.
She doesn't speak English, so
how do you know?
Understand.
How do you know? She might not speak it, but she could understand it. She could understand it.
LBC.
Okay, fair enough.
£275.
And also, he probably knew from the photo
of course he did.
That she was fine. He just thought, that's £275. Do you think he keeps a running tally? Yeah, go on. Wouldn't pay.
The insurance company would pay because it's part of the claim. And I spoke to them, and they kind of like, but it's unregulated, so... They sort of
They pay whatever they ask. I guess those of us who have had the need of these interventions are hugely outnumbered by the amount of people paying for pet insurance that never have to call upon it. Like all insurance syndicates. You know, the reason why they make a lot of money is because they take in a lot more than they pay out. So we all sit here, and mine wasn't insured, which is a source of particular pain to me. But we sit here marvelling at it. This is only really going to change when the insurers stop making big profits. So they're going to, what's that, 275 quid to stick a thermometer up a Labrador's backside? Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, we're still paying out dividends to our shareholders this year. So you might, if you sold it to a hedge fund, they might come in and start trying to trim costs if you sold the insurers to a hedge fund, but they're not really interested in that kind of business. The vets, however, there'll be hedge funds that own vets. I guarantee it. Well, I can't guarantee it because it might not be true. But I would not be very surprised if there were hedge funds or investment funds or private equity that own vets, own chains of veterinary surgeons, and that's their job. They'd go in and say, well, you know, charge $6,000 to fix a broken leg. What are they going to do? Chop it off? Well, fine. That's $4,000. Ha! Win-win. That's how it works. And also, 275 quid for looking at a seeping wound. Why not? What are they going to do? They're going to say no. Okay, well, don't bring the dog in then. And have your holiday ruined by worrying about whether or not she's poorly. Insurer says no, we're not paying. Well, you can't, because the vet's charged it. I'm not an expert. That's what the vet says it costs. You've insured me, therefore you have to... Oh, it's absolutely bonkers, isn't it? 11:30 is the time. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
The Israeli military says one of the bodies handed over by Hamas last night is not one of the hostages who were held in Gaza. The remains of three other people have been identified, but it means 21 Israelis are yet to be repatriated. The competition watchdog has outlined plans to force vets in the UK to publish price lists to stop pet owners being ripped off. An investigation by the CMA has found consumers aren't benefiting from strong competition. Sir Keir Starmer is set to face questions about the collapse of a Chinese spying trial in the House of Commons. The decision to drop the case has triggered a political row, likely to be reignited at Prime Minister's questions this lunchtime. LBC weather, another largely cloudy day with outbreaks of light rain, brighter spells in Scotland, Wales and Western England this afternoon. A high of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Stayshore. What is Stayshore? Stayshore is not just the UK's favourite travel insurance. Stayshore is the confidence that comes with knowing that you're covered by the company with more five-star reviews on Trustpilot than any other provider. A company that welcomes people of all ages with pre-existing medical conditions for single or multiple trips. So Stayshore with Stayshore Travel Insurance. UK's favourite relates to number of five-star Trustpilot reviews, T's and C's and verifications at stayshore.co.uk/reviews.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
33 minutes after 11. Beggars can't be choosers on a topic like this. There's so many people ringing in to tell me that they spent £800 having their rabbit's toenails cut. that I can't get any answers to the other questions that I want to ask. I think we've got one coming up on whether or not you can shop around. What happens when you shop around? Because the point of this story is that vets don't have to publish their price lists. So you'd have to ring them all up individually and say, how much for a hamster's leg? And then they say, I'm terribly sorry, this is a butcher's. No? All right, just me. I'm here all week. Try the veal. And you can't at the moment. So I'd like to speak to people, and I think we've got one or two coming, who have done it themselves, taken it, because somebody says it'd be £2,000 to brush your dog's teeth. You're going to go, hang on a minute. I'm sure it can be cheaper than that. But the emotion involved is why I mentioned undertakers at the top of the hour, because there's a little bit of you that thinks, oh, nothing's too good for Tiddles. Nothing's too good for Tiddles. What sacrifices have you made? Because if the insurers are picking it up, it's not as big a story, is it? As if they're not. You reach a point where, they're not paying anymore. What sacrifice you've made to pay your vet's bills? Have you taken the children out of private school? Sold the car? Cancelled a holiday? 0345 6060 973. Try and get through. It'll be hard, but it's worth it. Otherwise, it is going to be very... My friend Scott's been in touch. I didn't even know this story. His cat Benson, God rest their soul, had a stick stuck up its nostril. That's it. That's not the story. Had a stick stuck up its nostril, took it to the vets, £850. They couldn't even get it out. Mother-in-law did it with a pair of tweezers. £850 to fail to get a stick out of a dog's nostril. There should be a no-win, no-fee element to some of these engagements, surely. But how can it all cost so much? Kim's in Harlow. Kim, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello, Kim.
First-time caller, a bit nervous.
It's only me, and it's a ridiculous phone-in, so you've got absolutely nothing to worry about.
Yes, I adopted my lad at the age of 19 months from Battersea in 2016, and I have now claimed over £30,000 on insurance for him. So I have a lot of skin in this game.
Well, you do, except that, apart from your insurance premiums... You've not lost any money.
No, definitely the insurance company that I'm with have not made any profit from me. I mean, I do have an excess.
Yes.
I do have an excess for every condition, that first claim for every condition each year, and he has like 5 or 6 different medical conditions, so obviously that does build up. But what I'd like to say really is about the shopping around.
Yes.
Issue, and it is incredibly difficult. My veterinary practice is part of a big business vets. And when it comes down to drugs, the issue with that is that the vets themselves don't set the prices for these products. They are bought by the company that owns the veterinary practices, and they buy in the drugs from the pharmaceutical companies. So the vet has no wriggle room and things like that. So that's not just medication, it's anesthetics.
And they'll charge what they can get away with. They'll charge whatever they can get away with.
Absolutely.
And no one ever says, pardon? Sorry, what? What, sorry? Sorry, what, pardon?
I do.
And what do they say to you?
My vet, if there's a drug that they think that I can get cheaper from private prescription... One of the vet nurses or the receptionist will Google it for me.
And she'd get sacked if they found out.
Pardon?
She'd probably get sacked if they found out.
My vet will say to them, have a look, see if we can get, metformin or something cheaper.
Yes.
Or, there's a particular, he has lots of, he has inflammatory bowel disease, one of his issues. So there's a particular product that I use that I know I can buy in the pet shop for about £15. If they prescribe it through their system, it would be about £45.
I mean, that is a scam. Pure and simple.
It is a scam.
The delivery costs would be the same. The storage costs would be the same. All of the costs would be the same. The profit margin is 300% bigger, 400% bigger.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I think we're protected in this country by the NHS, as you mentioned, and pet treatment is private treatment.
So it's like the American system.
We have no understanding of what our drugs that we get from the NHS actually cost. So So, for example, my lad is on a couple of drugs that are human drugs, but are suitable for use for the dog. And the cost of them is phenomenal. It's like 5 or 6 tablets would be £60-70. Whereas I'd get a month's supply from the NHS for, well, I'm free because I'm old enough to get free prescriptions. But So I think that's part of the problem.
Well, I'll tell you what, if all the insurance companies closed down tomorrow and you couldn't get pet insurance in this country for love nor money, the costs of the vets would plummet immediately. They come absolutely plummeting down. Of that, I am certain. Kim, what a sparkling debut. Thank you. I look forward to your next contribution. And speaking of human drugs, you remind me of the missing word round, which I don't think I had completed, had I? Never before in the field of human conflict have so many people got this right. That didn't really work, did it? That reminds me, didn't Kemi Badenoch bowdlerise a Churchill quote at conference? So good news to bowdlerisation fans. PMQs is back from 12. Natasha will be joining me shortly to tee that one up. Here it is. Cannabis helps cancer patients gain weight by causing blank. I don't know that anybody got it wrong. That's never happened before. And I don't think anybody cheated. It is quite obvious when you pay attention. Cannabis helps cancer patients gain weight by causing munchies. Munchies. Apparently, I had to check with some younger colleagues, that is a name given to the appetite enhancement that occurs when people find themselves taking cannabis munchies, it's called. That is apparently why you may occasionally encounter glassy-eyed people in front of you at the queue at the 24-hour garage buying Monster Munch and Rizzler and Frankfurter sausages. Apparently, that's what my younger colleagues tell me. 20 minutes to 12 is the time. John's in Swindon. John, what made you pick up the phone?
Well, I better speak quietly because the cat's listening. she's having a couple of teeth out tomorrow.
Oh.
And my wife did the work on this. She shopped around. The quotes were from around £2,000 down to the independent vet that we're going to for £500. Now, we find the £500 acceptable because, obviously, there's anaesthetic, aftercare, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
She's an older cat, so we can't get insurance for her. But we love her to death, so we're going to pay the money, obviously.
And that's extraordinary. So the job is the same, which means the markup.
The job's the same.
So say that the independent vet you're going to is making 100 or 150 quid on that, or less, and then the other vet would have been making 1,600 quid.
Well, all the vets around here, the vast majority of them, are owned by equity release companies.
Yeah.
And,
they've got
interest in the drugs market as well. So the prices are going up and up and up. I mean, my sister's got insurance on her dog, but she still has to pay the excess. And I dread to think what she's paid there, but you know, the dog's still going strong, but she's no end of vet visits. And they cost thousands. Absolute thousands.
And that's it, isn't it? And they, I mean, it is. I think what normal people, and I don't know whether I can include you in that category, John, but normal people don't really understand how financial or equity professionals work. Because they are constantly just looking around for a fruit machine that's set to jackpot. And if that somehow gets closed down by regulation or by legislation, they'll just look around for another jackpot. They'll look around for another fruit machine that has been programmed to deliver jackpot. I always think of the payday loan companies. Do you remember them?
Yes, yeah.
Payday loan companies were delivering profits that would make your eyes water to precisely the same sort of people who then happened upon veterinary surgeries and thought, good God, we can sell them the drugs at a 500% markup. And most people won't ring around to find out they could get them for a fraction of the price around the corner.
My wife did all the legwork. She did all the legwork on this, and she found this small independent vet.
And he's saving 1,500 quid.
But he's investing a lot of money, of his own money, into this practice. I mean, the machinery and everything costs a lot of money.
Yeah, and that's why you can swallow the £500, even though for taking out two cats' teeth, it does, at first glance, sound excessive. So we don't want to be stupid about this and pretend that you can do it all in a spare bedroom with a pair of pliers. You want it to be done properly and humanely and safely and legally, but that doesn't alter the fact that the massive majority of stories that we're hearing, John being the exception, because his wife rang around in a way that we are not minded to do. I don't understand why we're not minded to do it more. And I speak as someone guilty of that sin. I didn't do it. I should have done it. I could have done it. I Googled amputation, but I didn't ring around to see what the going rate was to have a dog's leg fixed. And we don't do it, and we should. But I think the cleverest thing I've said today, it's the first time for everything, is that if the insurance, and I nicked it off a texter, which I then lost, so I can't even claim the credit for it, but if the insurance company's pulled out tomorrow, then the vet's prices would come down at a rate of knots. Because if we had to pay it ourselves, then we would make much more difficult decisions. We would do the sort of, you know, the unthinkable. Because we simply can't afford it. But insurers are picking up the bill, then we're going to charge whatever we want. That'll be £9,000, please, for brushing a chihuahua's teeth. Tanya's in Tewkesbury. Tanya, what would you like to say?
Good morning. Hi, James.
Hello,
I worked for a vet in California when I lived there, so anything I say obviously is not going to come back on any vets here.
Yeah.
I lasted maybe 2 months. Talk about unscrupulous. Mm. Now, this guy had a really good reputation. I'm not sure how he got it, probably because it was a very wealthy area. But they
Bedside manner, Tanya. It'll be really nice with the people and cuddling them.
Yeah.
Little doggy dog, we're going to make you better, aren't we? That's how you get a good reputation as a vet. And then, of course, you do make the dog better as well, and no one minds that you've charged them $50,000.
Yeah, he would also do things such as have his wife scope out the parking lot to see what car they'd arrived
Fantastic.
In.
Fantastic.
If it was this fancy car, then... but even, you know, I took care of the... checking the fecal matter, the animal's fecal matter, and, you know, samples and stuff like that. But when they would come up with the end price of the drugs, say the drugs were, I don't know, $13.59, you say, make it $14 to me. And they never questioned it. So everything, they were like penny pinching on every single level. And the worst part for me was if an animal had to be euthanized, you know, and there was a certain shelter thing, I don't want to go into too many details, he would have the vet techs do it. And like technician,
so not sensitively then.
No, those guys were great, but they were predominantly Mexican guys, really lovely guys to work with. They treated them like absolute, like they were lower than.
To be fair, this is a little bit irrelevant to the broader conversation, isn't it?
I'm getting there.
Oh Lord, it's one of those days. Go on, I'll give you 30 seconds.
I have a fantastic vet in this country, absolutely needs regulation, because does not charge like a wounded bull.
No, well, some do, because if they ask you, why would they even ask if you're insured when you bring your dog into the vet? Are you insured? Yes. Cha-ching. No. Oh. Have you thought about trying the one around the corner? I don't know whether you could do that. Could we do that? Could we do like a secret camera panorama type proper journalism? Not me, obviously. I'll get Henry Riley to do it. You go in there and you say, no, I'm not insured. And then you come back the next day in disguise and you say, yes, I am insured. You get two completely different prices. Would that be illegal? I get him at one of those Groucho Marx moustaches. Groucho Marx moustaches, even. God, that's a tongue twister, isn't it? Could you do it? Has anyone ever done that? Has anyone done that on TV? On Watchdog? It's the kind of thing Matt Allwright would be good at, isn't it? You just go in there and say, we were here yesterday, and stick your foot in the door like Roger Cook. We were here yesterday, and you told us it would be £700. We came back today and said we weren't insured, and you said you could do it for £3.50. This is outrageous behaviour. How do you account for yourself? It's 11:47.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
This country has an economy that needs to get going, that needs to get growth. Chief Secretary of the Treasury, James Murray, bottom in living standards, bottom in inflation, virtually bottom in growth. That's not gloomy. What is gloomy?
I don't think anyone would come on this show from the government pretending there isn't a lot more that we want to do to get inflation
down.
Because
you're the sort of bloke, if you were 3-0 down at half time, you'd be saying, it's going brilliantly.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses. Back tomorrow morning from 7, LBC.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're cruising through Europe's iconic cities along the Danube, or enjoying a rainforest tour through Costa Rica. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply. Over 50s only.
I'm telling you, raise taxes. That's how.
Cut spending. Less waste. More sense.
Move north. Get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
That's the delicious sound of a Tesco Finest salt-aged pork crackling joint. At Tesco, we know what makes crackling perfectly crispy. Our pork joints are salt-aged with pink Himalayan rock salt to ensure the crackling is as golden and as crisp as can be. Do you want to hear that again?
I thought you might.
It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Tesco, every little helps. Available in selected larger stores.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
James O'Brien on LBC.
10 to 12 is the time. Sean speaks for many people contacting the programme today when he points out that this discussion on vets fees, etc., provides a glimpse into what our healthcare system would look like should the NHS be changed to a private insurance system, as some politicians have said they want. You raise valid points, of course you do, but it isn't quite as black and white, perhaps, as you suggest. The system in France, for example, seems to be pretty impressive and is not exactly the same as the NHS. It does involve some element of insurance. So there are middle grounds. So it's a question of whether the politicians offering up a more insurance-based model have a track record of being trustworthy, correct, or honest. And if they haven't, then yes, that's what we should fear. If they have, then it's probably worth having a little look. Wendy is in Eastbourne. Wendy, what would you like to say?
Lovely James.
Hello, lovely Wendy.
what people have said about the corporations is true. There's roughly about three huge corporations that's taken over all the vets, hence the high rises because they want to pay their shareholders.
Same with undertakers, wasn't it? A few years ago we discovered that all the undertakers have been bought up by one or two massive American conglomerates, multi-conglomerates. Yeah. So there's no point even shopping around.
No, I mean, I'm going straight to cremation because I don't want to pay a load of money just to be, have a funeral. But anyway.
Cremation's not cheap, Wendy.
No, it's $1,500.
Well, you've done your research.
Yeah, I have. It's straight to cremation.
Okay.
So the minute, but when you die, they just take you off and give your ashes back and your family can have a little get-together if they want to.
Lovely.
So back to the vets. Four dogs.
Yes.
Four little dogs.
Yes.
And just a quick example of the cost. One of my dogs 2 years ago I had to put to sleep. I'd had her from a puppy and she was 14. That was £400. That was for the injection and the cremation. I've just heard that my other dog in January had 17 cell and that was £1,000. I had to borrow some money off my mum for that one.
Yes.
And my other little dog, who's quite young, she pulled a claw, went to the vet, he just sort of pulled a little bit, £65. So it's an awful lot of money.
Well, that's
now
quite cheap. I know it sounds a lot, but compared to some of the other stories I've heard, that's not actually that expensive.
Well, this vet knows me, and we get on well.
Well, I think you've got mates rates.
Yeah, he charged me for the consultation, not the actual little bit that he did.
Well, Scott paid £850 to a vet who failed to get a stick out of Benson's nose.
Well, that's nuts, isn't it?
Yeah.
But also, the vets are all lovely. lovely. It's not them. They don't get this money. They only get the normal wages. And most of them hate it because they do love animals and they do want to treat them. And my neighbour's daughter's just qualified as a vet. And she said, you know, it really hurts them. You know, they might have to put a dog to sleep just because the owner hasn't got enough money. Vets have a very high suicide rate, which weirdly, before I phoned you, I was Googling, and it's very high compared to some other places, partly because obviously they have a bit of a lonely job, they see a lot of sorrow, probably this as well, you know, they can't
also, do
their job
properly. You raise a valid point, so we should do that quickly then, shouldn't we, make it clear that this will often be something that is imposed upon the veterinarians that we encounter by the employers that they are working for, and
but it totally is. It is. They don't want to do this. Hence again, and also they've got access to things that they don't. I wish someone would do something about it. We're animal lovers in this country, and we've got this horrible corrupt system, and it's not the vet's fault. It's
no,
not.
No, good for you for reminding us of that, because it is easy to sort of blame the messenger, isn't it, rather than the person who sent the message, and the message will be coming from upstairs in many cases, not all. This is why the tale Tanya told from America was pertinent. If you're checking the car of the people outside in California to decide how many zeros you're going to stick on the vet's bill. But yeah, I think they did. A couple of you have told me actually that there was a rather good file on four on this on the BBC not long ago, and it is as grim as Wendy describes it. They've also just done, one of my favourite journalists, actually, or one of my favourite broadcasters, Tim Harford, has also done an inquiry into whether or not there's any truth at all in Conservative claims that millions of people are getting motability cars for anxiety or ADHD. And it's fair to say, and again, this is almost a missed information. In fact, let's do it as a missed information, shall we? Because you've heard this from all sorts of all the usual such. Basically, if someone's told you that millions of people are getting free cars for anxiety or ADHD, they would be the same people that told you Brexit was going to be brilliant, Liz Truss was a financial genius, and Boris Johnson was an extremely trustworthy man who would be a superb leader during difficult times. And they've now turned their attention to this ludicrous claim of motability cars, and the truth turns out to be
missed information.
Thank you, Emily. The truth turns out to be that 43,000 people on the relevant personal independence payment to this claim, half of them were aged between 16 and 19, and that the PIP is not assessed on what conditions people have, but on what they can do. This means that it's not at all clear, said an expert, a proper expert, an economist from the Institute for Fiscal Studies, looked at the total number of people with motability vehicles, which would include scooters and wheelchairs. So the idea that there are millions, as Helen Whateley claimed in her conference speech, is a blatant lie. But the bottom line is that it's not at all clear how Cammie Badenoch would fulfil her promise of preventing people with specific conditions such as ADHD from receiving motability cards, because assessments aren't determined by specific conditions. That promise wouldn't just be a tweak, it would require a radical rethinking of how disability benefits work. And it's not the first time this has been done. The Guardian had a look at this specific story as well back in March of this year. And, of course, as we've pointed out, if they're getting bored of slagging off immigrants, they're going to start slagging off disabled people. But it was the Daily Mail who tried to claim that the motability scheme was being overrun with people taking the mickey and conning or milking the taxpayer. The facts simply don't support the claim. It's like everything else. You find one person doing something bad and use it to claim that the whole system is rotten. But under that reading of the world, you'd have people setting fire to hotels full of asylum seekers because somebody who isn't an asylum seeker has committed a terrible crime. Oh, we live in that world. My bad. Mark's in Maidenhead. Last word on this, Mark. What have you got for us?
Morning, morning, James. Hello, I'm Mark. Actually returning on a 280-mile round trip, taking my vet up north from Maidenhead.
taking your pet, not your vet.
Well, close. Yes, my dog.
Yes. No, you said vet. So it was a slip of the tongue. I was just clarifying. You're not driving the vet around for 280 miles. You're driving the dog 280 miles. Because you did the work. You did the heavy lifting. You made the calls.
Tried, yes. So locally it was cruciate ligament surgery, and it's coming in locally between £4,500 and £7,000.
Yeah, that's the one.
I managed to get it a community interest company up in Shrewsbury, and they've done it for £2,500. But it's pushing me into debt because the insurers. I thought I was doing the right thing. I bought a policy that's got £10,000 worth of cover.
Yeah.
But no, they put a limit on this one. I'll get out less than I've actually put in premiums this year.
And is that because your dog is one of those fancy crossbreeds and it's an inherited condition that made her legs weak?
No.
No. What is what reason have they given you?
None. They've just decided that cruciate ligament surgery is something they will put a limit on.
And that would be in the small print or whatever. Have you signed
it?
Oh, mate, I'm sorry. So you've saved a ton of money, but you're still in the hole for what? For the rest of it.
Yeah, I took out two credit cards last week so that I could do it.
Oh, mate, you won't regret it. You won't regret it, will you?
No, I won't. No, she's worth it. Of course absolutely she is. Worth it. It's a pain in the neck.
You can suffer.
It all seems like very corrupt.
Yeah, it does. And you found one of the ones that wasn't, and then you got stiffed by the. By the insurance company. But yeah, crikey, I've changed, haven't I? 15 years ago, I'd have been telling Mark he was a muppet. But I completely get why he's done that. And he will not regret it. He will not regret it. Albeit that is a big, big financial hit. What an amazing hour of radio. I wonder whether the next one will live up to expectations. PMQs is back, which means Natasha Clark is here. It feels like it's been ages, Natasha. How are you?
How the devil are you? September the 13th was the last time we were here in the studio talking about Prime Minister questions. Do you know what happened that day?
It's a month ago. No.
Oh, I've obviously looked it up so I can tell you. It was the day before Peter Mandelson resigned. That's how long ago it was. Yeah, we still don't have a new one.
Feels like a different lifetime.
It does, doesn't it?
What are we expecting today?
So three options, I think, for Kemi Badenoch to go on today. The China spy scandal is really the only story in Westminster this week. The idea of this case being dropped, of these two men that were charged, and now that case has been dropped. Because the CPS say the government didn't give them the evidence to prove that China was or was not a threat. That might come up, but I think that's probably more likely to come up from the Lib Dems, actually, today.
One of those stories that I feel I should know more about, but I haven't really been
able
to. That
was me last week.
Was it? And have you been on a crash course?
Yeah, it is a tricky one to get your head around.
Yeah.
And, it's two different governments, lots of different laws, and obviously two people that no one's really ever heard of. But it obviously does go to the heart of our democracy and the heart of our government's relationship with China. However, the other two options, I think, for Kemi Badenoch, Israel, Gaza, and of course what we've been seeing in the past few days in terms of this peace deal. What we thought yesterday might be an opportunity for everyone to come together and praise that peace deal in the Commons was actually a very touchy affair. Kemi Badenoch really pushing the government, saying that they're basically making things worse in the region. So she could choose to go on that, but I think what she will go for is the economy. We've obviously heard from the Chancellor today for the first time, admitting what basically everybody in Westminster already knows, taxes are going to have to go up in the budget.
Yes, and Brexit will be blamed.
Yeah, and that's really interesting, actually.
Thank God.
Thank goodness for that. You probably weren't listening to Ian Dale the other day.
How dare you?
Were you listening to Ian Dale the other day?
No.
I mentioned you on Ian Dale the other day. I said James O'Brien is going to be delighted that this Labour government is finally talking about Brexit and the damage it's been done to the economy. And that seems to be the way that this government are going to essentially set us up for this budget, set us up for what they say is going to, have to be big tax rises. And obviously spending cuts as well to make the books add up. And they are, Rachel Reeves said this morning, the impact of Brexit is severe and long-lasting.
The problem is that although it's true, it doesn't necessarily mean people will welcome the information or will buy the explanation. It's the difference between whether the truth does matter, possibly not, or whether the truth should matter, definitely.
And also, will it really land? People will, of course, be asking, well, why didn't you make this argument last year or the year before that? And of course, what you're actually going to do about it is probably the bigger question, right? So even if you do want to blame Brexit for having a big hole in your finances for the government, it's all about, can they actually find the solutions for it? And there's a lot of people that like to conveniently blame Nigel Farage, blame Brexit for this, but actually, we need to deal with the world as it is. And at the moment, there's a big hole, and we've got to deal with it.
So no, here's a story that none of your colleagues on Brexit-leaning newspapers will have been reporting. Catherine Mann was in Philadelphia earlier this week. She's, of course, the Bank of England's policymaker. And I quote, by unravelling Britain's deep trading relationships with the EU, Brexit took the UK further down that road and reduced the economy's speed limit, which has made the country more inflation prone. When you talk about the supply side in the economy, you cannot get away from mentioning the implications of Brexit. And the supply side of the economy for the UK is a real challenge. And this affects her ability to make decisions, she also said. Of course, she's wrong when she says you can't get away from mentioning the implications of Brexit, because if you encourage your listeners or your readers or your voters to support Brexit, then the last thing on the planet that you want anybody to be doing at the moment is talking about the obvious, measurable and established implications of Brexit.
Yeah, and it's interesting you mention inflation in that, because that's exactly what the IMF were talking about yesterday in their global economic report, saying that, that the UK is uniquely placed on the inflation front, and we are going to face higher prices in Britain. Thanks to a combination of factors. But now the government explicitly saying this is down to Nigel Farage. I just don't know how many people that do vote reform or are considering voting reform.
They shouldn't leave Liz Truss out of it. She triggered a market crash as well, which is a huge impact on Britain's fiscal credibility. Something else that the Bank of England's policymaker said at a National Association for Business Economics conference in Philadelphia on Monday. Something else you won't be reading about in the Daily Telegraph, the Daily Mail, the Times.
I think you probably will, to be honest, because I think everybody in Westminster and I think everybody in most newspapers. This speech. I haven't heard.
Who would listen to the Bank of England's policymaker on the question of what measures she uses to decide policies?
Let's get her on.
Don't need to. I can tell you. We're at that point in the week where we will cross immediately to the House of Commons as soon as Kemi Badenoch gets to her feet. If you were going to put money on it, you'd go with the jobs numbers. And he'll come back like the Tories did for years by saying, well, the IMF have also said that we're going to have the second highest growth in the G7.
Yeah, I'm sure. But I think she'll
Groundhog Day.
I think she'll try. And I think she'll try this again for the next sort of 6 to 7 weeks about trying to get the government into a corner on which taxes might go up or which taxes might go down. Obviously, we know that that doesn't tend to work. Rachel Reeves, obviously, she's not there. She's not on the front bench for Prime Minister's question. She's in Washington. The Prime Minister doesn't like to rule anything in or out ahead of a budget. He doesn't like to give any sort of hint about what we're going to see or not. So
when is the budget?
It is the end. I think it's the last week of November. Okay. 25th of November, I think.
So that's on the way.
Yep.
5 minutes after 12 is the time. I usually have a little guess, don't I, at what's likely to come up, but I don't think I've got... I mean, I'm a bit out of the loop, really. It'd be very odd if she went in on the Middle East. But then again, she is very odd.
So yesterday, I could say I just thought it was a moment for all parties to welcome this peace deal, but she was very spiky, and actually lots of politicians around the chamber were quite snippy with her for saying, you know, basically trying to create a huge fight with Keir Starmer about Israel-Gaza, and, you know...
Yeah, that is a little odd.
It didn't feel like the day for it, let's put it that way.
Steve Witkoff making it clear that the UK diplomatic effort behind the scenes was absolutely crucial to the success. And some reports today pointing out that the decision of the UK to recognise a state of Palestine will have been absolutely instrumental in persuading Arab countries to get behind this idea.
That's what Keir Starmer said yesterday. Exactly.
And this is just true, unfortunately. But Kemi Badenoch, of course, gets all her information from Twitter or from sort of far-right American news sources. And so she'll be reading or learning the opposite of what everybody else knows to be true.
Yeah, and look, obviously our relationship with Israel has, of course, changed under this Labour government. They have very much distanced themselves from Netanyahu's government, and for good reason, many people in government say. She says that's led to deterioration of relationships, but actually, you know, the fact that we've got this peace deal, no matter how it's come across, should really be seen as the proof there.
I wish I was surprised that she managed to use even that moment. I mean, you know, I was bigging up Donald Trump on this programme.
Even you?
Yes, because you have to. In much the same way, actually, a political story we haven't mentioned today, this scumbag who's been sent to jail for threatening to kill Nigel Farage absolutely should be sent to jail. Nobody should have to endure that kind of behaviour, whether it's online or not. If you're calling for people to set fire to hotels, you should be in jail. If you're calling for a politician to be killed or threatening to do it yourself, you should be in jail. So I presume that lot will be taking a day off from claims that policing social media activity is some sort of infringement of our freedoms of speech. The whole point about footballification is that it stops you from telling the truth. And unfortunately, I think Kemi Badenoch might be the most footballificated, if that's a word, politician of our age. It's a bit late. It's 12:07.
It is. What's going on?
Do we know what's going on?
I don't know. Yesterday.
Have to be careful not to be flippant, because it might be something
very
serious.
They might be doing something very serious. Yes, exactly. I saw Lindsay Hoare looking very angry a minute ago just on the screen, so he's probably shouting at the Prime Minister for something or another, or the government for something or another. But we have just, if you're seeing this on the screen, Prime Minister's just said that he will be publishing the witness statements in the China spy trial. That's exactly what the Liberal Democrats have been pushing for today. Comes after the CPS, basically the Crown Prosecution Service, said last night that they would have basically no problem with this. The government earlier this week, tried to lay the blame at the CPS, saying it was up to them that they dropped the trial. They're now saying, actually, no, we can publish all of the witness statements. You can see for yourself. It's no longer a live trial. This row between the government and the CPS. You're not selling it.
No, you're not selling it. I'm mildly interested, but it does. I mean, also, it depends entirely upon attitudes to China, doesn't it? Oh, well, we'll find out now. Here we go.
Mr. Speaker, thank you for marking 4 years since the terrible murder of Sir David Amess. I know that the whole House will want to join me in remembering our former colleague. He is very much still in our hearts and minds. Yes. The way he died reminds us that the security of members and this Parliament is paramount. So it concerns us all that the case against two people spying on members of this House has collapsed. Yep. Yep. It is simply unbelievable. Yep. Exactly as I expected, the Prime Minister had to be dragged out at the top of PMQs to give a statement that answers no questions. I don't know what they're laughing at. We are talking about the security of this Parliament. He had to be dragged out to repeat only more obfuscation. It is simply unbelievable. It is simply unbelievable that he is trying to say the last government did not classify China as a threat. So I will refresh his memory. In 2021, the previous government's integrated review described China as the biggest state-based threat to the UK's economic security. In 2024, the Minister for Security said from that dispatch box that China poses a threat. But let's leave aside the government. In 2022, the Director General of MI5 in November classified China as a threat in his remarks. How is it possible that the government failed to provide the evidence that the CPS needed to prosecute?
The substantive evidence was provided in 2023 by the previous government. That is when the witness statement was submitted. I am going to disclose it. They will all be able to read it. The substantive evidence was written and disclosed and submitted in 2023 under the last government. I notice she didn't indicate whether ministers were involved in that at the time. Mr. Speaker, she questions what's in the review, the refreshed review in 2021 and 2023. Let me be clear. The then Foreign Secretary, sitting, I think, over here, the Honourable Member for Braintree, 1 month after the arrest, so absolutely the relevant time, gave a speech at Mansion House. It was called Our Position on China, setting out the government's policy. He said in that speech, summing up China as a threat in one word would be, his words, impossible, impractical, and most importantly, unwise. Foreign Secretary, Mr. Speaker, it wasn't just him. Mr. Speaker, the Leader of the Opposition was Business Secretary at the time. In September 23, the Leader of the Opposition said, her words, September 23, the relevant year, her words, we should certainly not be describing China as a foe. It's worth looking up the word foe in the dictionary, Mr. Speaker. She went, Mr. Speaker, it doesn't end there, Mr. Speaker. In September 2024, the Leader of the Opposition said this, I quote, I have shied away from calling China a threat. She is playing politics with national security.
The Prime Minister can read the beginning of a quote. Let me finish that quote. At the end of that quote that he just read out, I did describe China as a threat. But this whataboutery that he is doing neglects the fact that those spies were charged under a Conservative government. They were let off under Labour. He has not answered any questions. On Monday, Mr. Speaker, on Monday, the security minister repeatedly told the House that ministers did not take decisions, that it was the deputy national security advisor who had full freedom. Is the government seriously saying that only one man, the deputy national security advisor, had anything to do with this failure? Is he seriously saying that the deputy did not discuss with the national security advisor, did not discuss with the Home Secretary or with anyone in Downing Street? Is the Prime Minister seriously saying that?
Yes. Mr. Speaker, let me explain why. Firstly, the case was charged under the last government according to the evidence submitted under the last government, which set out their policy decision. What was on issue in the trial is not the position of the current government, the position of the last government. And they carefully avoided describing China as an enemy because that was their policy at the time. Mr. Speaker, so far as the position under this government is concerned, no minister or special advisor was involved. And I will double check this because I've had it. I will double check this. So, Mr. Speaker, this is important. After the charging decision, the prosecution were very careful about who would then see the witness evidence. I will double check, Mr. Speaker, exactly what instruction was taken. But my instruction, I can be absolutely clear, no minister was involved, no special advisor was involved in this, and I'm assured as I can be that the prosecution was saying that it would be the witnesses only that were involved in short updates, the evidence that was submitted under the last government.
Mr. Speaker, the end of the answer was different from the beginning of the answer. What on earth is the point of us having a lawyer rather than a leader as a Prime Minister if he can't even get the law right on a matter of national security? He keeps going to the CPS. The CPS have said that they are satisfied that they were right to charge in August 2024. The Sunday Times reported that Jonathan Powell, the Prime Minister's national security advisor, convened a secret meeting to discuss the security consequences of the China spy trial. Did the meeting happen, or is the Sunday Times making it up?
Mr. Speaker, she's clearly not a lawyer or a leader. Mr. Speaker. The problem for her is I do actually understand the law. I know what's got to be proven. I've also looked at the evidence. I've also looked at the evidence that was put in under the last government in relation to this case. There was a meeting in September. That did not involve the National Security Advisor discussing the evidence in any way, nor, Mr. Speaker, one further piece of evidence. The final statement in this case was submitted in August 2025. There was no further submission of evidence, one way or the other, after any discussion in September. This is a red herring, a completely scurrilous allegation made by the Leader of the Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister has now twice directly contradicted the words of his security minister. They cannot both be right. The chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee couldn't get any answers from the security minister. The CPS said that they were satisfied that the decision to charge the case in April 2024, not August, in April 2024, was correct on the basis of where the law stood at that time. This is a matter of fact. It is not a matter of what the previous government had thought. It is not a matter of it not meeting a legal test. It did. Something must have changed when the charges were brought and when the case collapsed. The charges were brought under us. The case collapsed under them. Can the Prime Minister tell us what changed and what collapsed the case?
Mr. Speaker, I've said I will publish the witness statements in full. The whole House will then see exactly what was set out in 2023 in the substantive witness statement and exactly what was set out in the two supplementary witness statements, and she will then realise what she's just said is entirely baseless.
Mr. Speaker, the CPS has said in the clearest terms that this prosecution was dropped because this government did not provide the statement they expected. Why should we believe a man who at the last Prime Minister's questions said he had full confidence in the best friend of a convicted paedophile. Yeah, okay. Forgive us if we don't trust a word he says. This all stinks of a cover-up. Given his statement earlier, given his statement earlier, will the Prime Minister publish today not just the government witness statements, but also the meeting minutes and all of the correspondence that he had with the CPS?
Mr. Speaker, let me be clear. The only process I want to go through is in relation to some of the individuals in the statements to make sure they know it's coming out. I can assure the House there's no substantive delay here. I know it is of concern to a number of people, acute of concern to them. I will have the statements out in full. There is a bit of proper process I need to go through. The Honourable Member will understand why that's necessary. Then they'll be published in full. She asks about minutes, etc. There is a usual rules and process for government. But I remind her that the substantive issues in this case were discussed at meetings under the previous government. So they're asking me to disclose the discussions that they had in relation to the witness statement in the first place.
Mr. Speaker, you deserve better, and this House deserves better than the evasive answers that we have had from the Prime Minister. Even the former Cabinet Secretary, Lord Butler, has accused the government of being economical with the truth on this issue. The Prime Minister can't tell us why Jonathan Powell had a secret meeting which the Security Minister said he had no involvement in the case. He can't tell us why his government did not provide evidence that China was a threat. I suspect those statements won't prove it either. He's blaming his civil servants. He's blaming the media. He's blaming the last government. He cannot explain why he could not see this case through. He should have seen this case through. And let me be clear, Mr. Speaker, about what has happened. A serious case involving national security has collapsed because this government is too weak to stand up to China. And if the Prime Minister cannot protect the members of this House, what does that say about his ability to protect this country?
The case did not proceed because the policy of the past government did not meet the test that was necessary. That is the long and the short of it. Far from evading, I have said I will disclose the full witness statements that set out exactly what was in the witness statements, exactly what the subsequent statement says, and the allegation that somehow they were changed, that the first statement and the second statements are different, is completely and utterly unfounded. Mr. Speaker, it's a pathetic spectacle. Instead of taking responsibility for the fact they failed to update the law so this case could actually be... The review, Mr. Speaker, 2015 was the review of the legislation. They took 8 years to change the law. Had they done that more quickly, this case would have proceeded. It was their failure, and they're just slinging mud. Meanwhile, we're getting on, Mr. Speaker, with renewing our country, new planning reforms, online hospitals for waiting lists, new opportunities for young people. Labour's building a better future. They can't even come to terms with their past.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Derby is a city on the up, but unfortunately this last year we've been devastated by knife crime. Nasty Tory austerity decimated frontline policing, and we're now paying the price for that. At my regular city centre safety summits, the message is clear: to turn the page, we need action and not words. Can the Prime Minister update my constituents on what action this government is taking to make sure all our residents, our visitors and our workers can enjoy our city centre safely?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I thank him for his question. As he will have heard at our conference, we had Pooja Kanda there, who I've met a number of times. Her son Ronan was fatally stabbed, and I'm proud that we've delivered, Mr. Speaker, Ronan's law to tackle the sale of ninja swords, and we've also banned zombie knives and strengthened controls for online knife sales. I pay tribute to his work setting up the City Safety Summits.
Daisy Cooper, Deputy Leader of the Liberal Democrats.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I associate myself and my party with the tributes to David Amos? And on behalf of my party, can I also pay tribute to Min Campbell, who is being laid to rest today? That is the reason why my right honourable friend, the member for Kingston and Surbiton, cannot be here. And I'd like to thank you, Mr. Speaker, and the Prime Minister and other members of this House for their very kind tributes yesterday. We welcome the new level of transparency from the Prime Minister, and we will scrutinise those witness statements closely, but it is clear there are still many questions to be answered, including questions from Hong Kongers, Mr. Speaker, because Hong Kongers in St. Albans and across the UK have settled in our communities after they have fled repression at the hands of the Chinese state. But now they see a British government that wants to make it harder for Hong Kongers to settle here permanently, that refuses to impose targeted sanctions on Chinese officials who put bounties on Hong Kongers' heads, that is refusing to rule out a Chinese super embassy and is failing to tackle Chinese espionage. Mr. Speaker, Hong Kongers are starting to ask whether the Prime Minister is trading away their security and safety in our communities for a cozier relationship with Beijing. What is the Prime Minister's answer to them?
The answer is no, and we have given and will continue to give support to Hong Kongers who need and deserve that support, and she will be assured that the Jimmy Lai case is raised regularly at every opportunity by my ministers and indeed by me.
Daisy Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think that Hong Kongers will require a lot more reassurance and action from this government. But it is not just the Chinese government that is a threat to our country. On Monday, the far-right, racist hate preacher Tommy Robinson, who is currently on trial for allegedly refusing to comply with counter-terror police, claimed that his legal costs are being paid by Elon Musk. It is outrageous that a man who has so much control over what people read online every day could be funding someone who stokes far-right extremism on our streets. If this was Putin, the government surely would act. So will the Prime Minister commission the security services to assess the threat that Elon Musk poses to our democracy and recommend measures to this House that we can take to stop it?
Yeah. Well, I can tell her we do look across the board at threats to our democracy and must continue to do so. I won't comment on the particular case given the state of legal proceedings.
Alex Backer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Next year marks the 75th anniversary.
Well, that was a little bit more interesting than I was expecting, albeit I'm still very much in the camp of people who don't understand or don't particularly care. Karen puts it well. Am I missing something? Should I care more about this? She asks about the so-called China spy case. But I will come back. I'm afraid we'll be asking not for the first time on a Wednesday afternoon. Just how bad was that for Badenoch?
This is LBC. Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m.
I have found completely shocking the extent of the anti-Semitism that people have felt because of what's been going on in the Middle East, emboldened not just to criticise the Israeli government, but to use what is happening in the Middle East as a way of allowing you to expose what you really believe. And I think a lot of people have shown themselves for what they really are.
Tom Swarbrick, with cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions, built for businesses. LBC.
Luton Airport Express from St Pancras, featuring little prices.
Only got 32 minutes to go. Comes every 30 minutes, you know.
So turn up your radio. We'll turn the price way down low.
Book ahead and get a dealio. Starts from a tenner and you're good to go.
Nothing worse than traffic.
So, so. Would it happen on a train?
Heck no.
32 minutes, no traffic.
Cause it's a train.
Luton Airport Express, 32 minutes to go.
Welcome our new bookworms to the club. Now, do you read traditional books or e-books?
Oh, real books.
Traditional, yeah. Always.
Yeah, quite.
I read e-books. Yeah, I adjust it so the font's huge.
Ooh, they make large font books.
Think bigger. Imagine Moby Dick all cuddled up with a book. His font size.
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe it's time for varifocals. At Specsavers, get 2-for-1 varifocal glasses from £110. Conditions and exclusions apply. See online for details.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
We probably, before I do my traditional run through some of the texts that dropped during PMQs, we probably need to hear the statement that Keir Starmer made about the China spy case at the top, because to understand how the leader of the opposition ended up sounding so ridiculous. I'm speculating that he kind of shot her fox before she stood up. So let's just have a listen to that.
I'm deeply disappointed by the outcome. We wanted to see prosecutions. National security will always be the first priority of this government, and we will always defend against espionage. Last night, the Crown Prosecution Service clarified that, in their view, the decision whether to publish the witness statements of the DSNA is for the government. I therefore carefully considered this question this morning, and after legal advice, I have decided to publish the witness statements. Given the information contained, we will conduct a short process, but I want to make clear I intend to publish the witness statements in full.
Which kind of takes all of the stuffing out of any questions about what is being kept secret and what is being kept from the public. Who was it, Natasha Clark, who said, honesty always gives you the advantage of surprise in the House of Commons?
Go on, tell me.
It was Jim Hacker, a fictional character from Yes Minister. This was actually from Series 2 of Yes Prime Minister. Honesty always... Because he did that thing again, which is rather rare, where she did a long question about, is he really...
Yes. Yeah. And next.
He is a lawyer.
You can't out-lawyer Keir Starmer, can you? You
cannot. I wouldn't have thought so. Although I discovered that Badenoch has a law degree.
She does, yeah. But he's clearly much better at it than she is.
But she never practiced as a lawyer.
Yes.
And perhaps we had a rather irresistible demonstration of why.
But she was totally schooled there by the Prime Minister making that announcement at the top of PMQs, which is always something that you, as Leader of the Opposition, need to be prepared for.
Plan B.
Exactly. You need to have a plan B. You need to have a plan B in terms of your topics. And indeed, as your questions, as I think Daisy Cooper did as well, because obviously Liberal Democrat stand in because Ed Davies off at Min Campbell's funeral today has got a list of other questions on this topic that the Lib Dems clearly want to raise on China, going in completely other directions.
Yes.
And Kemi Badenoch did not have those. She just repeatedly said, the CPS said this, are you really saying this? And again, I don't think it worked. She wasn't really prepared for him to publish that advice, which obviously he did agree to at the very start. Yeah, not a fantastic performance from Kemi Badenoch.
She should get
there.
Chris on her team. Chris texted, I'm sure everyone plans carefully for PMQs, but it appears that the opposition had no planned alternative questions when it was completely obvious that her questions were silly, rendered silly, essentially, by the statement and by this promise to reveal all of the... all of the relevant witness statements.
Yeah, and you talk about, you know, why should people care about this China story and what relevance is it to people? I thought Daisy Cooper's questions about the Chinese embassy, failing to tackle espionage, a cosy relationship with China, and of course the Hong Kongers who have sought refuge in the UK, that all brings it a little bit closer to home, and those were all the things that Kemi Badenoch failed to do. She was asking very technical questions about the CPS and the case and the government and the threat level and law, and again, that was all things that Keir Starmer far, far stronger on. And as a result, I don't think she landed any blows there. There are real questions for the government about this case, about why it has collapsed, about why the CPS have been so forthright with blaming this government and saying, what has changed between the last Tory government, this Labour government? Why is this? These two men were able to be charged, which obviously meant that there was a level of sort of burden of proof that was... you know, would have had to have been met for them to have met that charging decision, but no longer is the case. These three witness statements will be published in full from Matt Collins, the Deputy Director of National Security. What are they going to say? Keir Starmer clearly happy for them to be out there, but there are unanswered questions. But I think Kemi Badenoch really failed to get to the heart of why this is an important case for the country.
You're talking about the DPP, Stephen Parkinson. As far as I understood it, what he said was that the government hadn't provided further evidence in order to allow the trial to proceed.
Yeah, and the government came back and said, we have provided at least three witnesses.
Well, there might not have been any further evidence.
But if there wasn't, then why were they able to be charged in the first place under the evidence that the CPS did have?
But that was under the Conservative government.
I'm not sure I follow.
The original charges.
Yeah, so why was it... What has changed?
I don't know. But
it's a really tricky area.
I'm just not entirely trusting the journalism that's responsible for propelling this into the place that it's ended up in, because if there is not further evidence that has somehow been withheld, then I don't know what they're being accused of.
Well, They're basically, I think it was that, that they were charged under the national, what was previously an Espionage Act, which is some law in was literally first launched in 1911. It was updated to become the National Security Act, which basically said that the level of proof that you had to prove that somebody was spying for another country was basically that you had to say another country was an enemy. So they are saying that because this government, the previous Tory government and this Labour government have both refused to call China an enemy or a threat, they are saying that the burden of proof from within government was not reached in order to get that. However, it does raise the question, how on earth did you charge these two men in the first place? And what has changed between you charging them and now them having this case dropped?
Well, I'm with Karen. Except for the bit where she categorically stated that the quote that Keir Starmer read out, in which he accused her of refusing to call China a threat, and she claimed that she had actually called China a threat, and if you listen to the rest of the quote, you'd know that. So the bit he read out was, "I have shied away from calling China a threat." So let's actually listen to the, shall we listen to the rest of the quote? Because we've managed to dig it out already.
We certainly should not be describing China as a foe, but we can describe it as a challenge, which is what the Justice Secretary said yesterday, and which is what I'm saying today. I don't think we should be careless in terms of how we speak about other countries.
And the other quote, "I have shied away from calling China a threat," goes on, "because I think that if you escalate in language, then you need to be ready to escalate in action." And would you like to have a guess at what headline Politics UK chose to report these comments under?
I feel like I'm at advantage here because you already told me this. Kemi Badenoch refuses to call China a threat, I think, is the
and
answer.
That's the story to which she's referring. So, I mean, how much of the supposed goodwill that she generated during the conference speech has she now squandered in her first PMQs back in the building?
Yeah, it's fair to say that her last one, where she almost, you know, got a scalp out of Peter Mandelson, and then 24 hours later he did eventually resign, was her strongest yet, and that probably was one of her weakest. So she's not done fantastically. Kemi Badenoch and other politicians from across the spectrum have repeatedly struggled to call China a threat, both inside government and outside government. And she is, I think, being disingenuous by saying, well, actually, there were plenty of government documents and plenty of national security reports that described China as a threat. Yes, but the government did not designate China as a threat. They are still not on the enhanced foreign influence tier, which other countries like Iran, for example, is on. It's clear that this government wants a closer relationship with China. Rachel Reeves has just been, Ed Miliband has been. Keir Starmer was meant to go to China this year. We expect that decision, that trip is probably not going to happen, at least this year, potentially going into next now. There are questions for the government on exactly what's happening.
They're still involved in building power stations in this country.
They're involved in so many different things. They're involved in.
You can't really call them.
Well, exactly. And that really does bring into question the relationship with China and also our economic, you know, growth, which Keir Starmer is absolutely wanting to throw the book at. You know, there has been a lot of talk from within government about exactly how we handle
very
this relationship
the news.
With China.
Which is a shame, because I thought that Daisy Cooper's questions were rather good as well. I'm glad that you've referenced them. And that question about Elon Musk and Stephen Lennon was particularly pertinent, but I'm frightened of saying anything else because of the live court proceedings that one of those characters is currently involved in and whose legal fees are apparently being met by the other. 12:35 is the time. Apologies for tardiness to Dominic Ellis, who has your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer has promised to publish key witness statements following the collapse of a Chinese spying trial. Downing Street has strongly rejected claims it spiked the prosecution of two men who denied espionage charges. The Israeli army says one of four bodies returned by Hamas to Israel last night is not a former hostage. It means the remains of 21 captives are yet to be transferred as part of the ceasefire deal brokered by Donald Trump. And vets could be forced to publish price lists and put a cap on the cost of providing prescriptions. The competition watchdog has proposed sweeping changes to the sector. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of light rain for most, some brighter spells for Scotland, Wales and the west of England with highs of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Stayshore. What is Stayshore? Stayshore is not just the UK's favourite travel insurance.
StaySure is the confidence that comes with knowing that you're covered by the company with more five-star reviews on Trustpilot than any other provider. A company that welcomes people of all ages with pre-existing medical conditions for single or multiple trips. So stay sure with StaySure Travel Insurance. UK's favourite relates to number of five-star Trustpilot reviews, T's and C's and verifications at staysure.co.uk/reviews.
With the long, hot summer still fresh in the memory, it's easy to forget what's around the corner. Prepare your BMW for whatever the great British weather can muster with a BMW seasonal inspection. For just £39.99, our expert technicians will top up fluids and oil, check the essentials like tyres, wipers and battery, and return your BMW washed, vacuumed and winter ready. Search BMW seasonal inspection. T's and C's apply.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 12:38 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where, as is our tradition now on Wednesdays, we turn our attention to a couple of stories that we can explore in rather more depth than we would ordinarily, partly because PMQs drives such a juggernaut through normal proceedings. So I'd like to introduce you to Ian Harnett, who is the Chief Investment Strategist at Absolute Strategy Research. And it was an article he wrote for the FT last week, "The AI CapEx Endgame is Approaching," that made me think that we all probably need to be a little bit more aware about why, in the context of AI, which the last time I checked, Ian, was going to be the answer to all of our problems and the cure for all of our ills, is now appearing alongside the words bubble and burst in various discourses and conversations. What is going on?
So I think, James, thanks very much for having me on, and thanks very much for reading that article in the Financial Times. Undoubtedly, AI is going to be a key driver of our lives, you know, over the next decade. But, you know, the fact that we're talking to each other, you know, I'm on my my smartphone, you're in a studio, you know, this is everything the digital geniuses back in 2000 told us were going to happen. The Internet of Things, et cetera, et cetera. And the winners in that tech bubble back in 2000, people like Microsoft, Apple, Oracle, Amazon, they are the winners today. But that didn't stop Amazon falling 95%, and it didn't stop Microsoft falling 65% and taking 16 years before it regained that peak level. So I think what we're trying to get across in our discussions with our clients and here is that the theme may be structural, but there's a price for everything.
I think I understand, but feel free to tell me if I don't. So it's not a question about the potential impact of the technology. It's a question about the amount of money that is being thrown at the issue and who is throwing it, crucially. Because
absolutely.
So
and how quickly they're throwing it as well, James.
Why does that happen? So that's just about, I want a piece of this action. So it's almost like tulip mania in 17th century Holland.
That's what you get in these bubble type episodes. And so why do I think it's a bubble? Because, you know, historically, when you look back at what bubbles do, they go up a long way very quickly. And you know, the AI stocks over the last decade have outperformed the equity market generally six times over. At the peak of the TMT bubble, the TMT bubble was five times. And they've started to buy each other's goods. They've started to buy each other in the M&A market. And, you know, these are all the classic signs. And the final bit of the story is that we are now seeing them do this massive build out. About $1.3 trillion worth between now and 2027. You know, if only the UK government had that kind of money to throw around, we'd all be very happy.
Why is it relevant that they've started buying and selling stuff off each other? So I think you're referring to the Nvidia deal. So just talk us through that.
OpenAI.
Yes.
So it's part of a self-referential process. I'll buy my stuff if you buy your if you buy something back from me. And even better, is they're actually lending each other money to buy each other's goods. It's called vendor financing in the finance world,
and it's all completely legal. But we've heard this song before.
We have, and I think that's one of the worries that you have, which nearly every financial crisis has some of these kind of elements in them, where you get this very rapid growth in share prices. People get overexcited. That pours money into the whole theme, which helps feed this very rapid build out of capacity, and probably too much capacity in the short run.
I think I get it now, which is a testament to your clarity. And it is a little bit simpler than perhaps some of the coverage allows. Essentially, and I'm going to put it into the simplest of terms I can, I'd like to say for the benefit of my listeners, but it's actually for the benefit of me. I remember the dot-com boom and bust,
yeah,
because I had friends working for companies that were suddenly worth millions of pounds, and even they didn't understand why.
Absolutely.
Because they had equity in these companies that was almost overnight worth, in some cases, an extra zero more than their salary,
yeah,
or two zeros more than their salary. And we all sat around at the time thinking, this can't sustain, can it? But people, investors, were so terrified of missing the boat that they bought everything they could get their hands on.
And fear of missing out.
So the more they bought, the higher the prices went up. So the price of this stuff now is massively inflated, but 10 years from now, it will still be world-changing and incredibly huge.
Absolutely. And
right,
what you actually saw in that dot-com bubble, and more importantly, the bust, and this is,
yes,
what we were writing about in the FT, is actually the bust bit is as important as the bubble bit. Because, when everything busts, you've still got that, that new infrastructure. You've still got those data centers that have got masses of energy going in and capacity to send stuff out on the other side. But when the price goes down and somebody can buy up that, that physical capital at a much cheaper price, then you can start to do very different things with it. So it took until 2007 for us to come up with the iPhone, 5 years after the bust. Without the bust, the iPhone might not have materialized.
Got it. Good grief. I hadn't thought of it like that. Final question. Is there a point, can we see the point on the graph? Is there a point at which the growth in the value of these companies became suspicious, or is it too incremental to track?
It's too incremental, and I think you have to recognize, and this is why we talked about the end game rather than the stop. You don't know what's going to happen. But the key point is that the story, the theme, is very structural.
Yeah.
But you need somebody on the other side of the trade to buy the stuff.
Yes.
And the users, things like banks, retail shops, they tend to have cyclical, so their cash flow goes up and down as economic activity goes up and down. And it's their cash flow that's the critical thing, not the underlying technology.
So people reading the headlines and concluding that the impact and importance of AI have been overhyped are wrong. It is simply the current value of the AI companies.
Absolutely. And history tells us that those people that invest late in the process tend to lose the greatest amount of money. And typically you lose between 70 to 80% of the value of your equity from the top of a bubble.
Ian Harnett, brilliant stuff. Thank you so much. Chief Investment Strategist at Absolute Strategy Research, also the author of that article in the FT last week, the AI CapEx Endgame is Approaching. And it's not my strongest suit, as you know, the world of economics, but unless you text me any accurate abuse during the forthcoming break, I think whether we successfully got our heads completely around that. It's 12:46.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Rachel Reeves says she is looking at tax and spending ahead of the budget next month. Hardly a departure, but should she just raise income tax?
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
I like my private details on a need-to-know basis. In other words, I need to know them and you don't. That's why I use Bitdefender whenever I'm connected, working tirelessly in the background to protect me across all my devices, keeping my digital identity confidential, on the down low, on the hush-hush, trusted by the experts, used by the pros.
Bitdefender, a global leader in cybersecurity. Trusted, always.
Verify now at bitdefender.com.
Stayshore. What is Stayshore? Stayshore is not just the UK's favourite travel insurance. Stayshore is the confidence that comes with knowing that you're covered by the company with more five-star reviews on Trustpilot than any other provider. A company that welcomes people of all ages with pre-existing medical conditions for single or multiple trips. So Stayshore with Stayshore Travel Insurance. UK's favourite relates to number of five-star Trustpilot reviews, T's and C's and verifications at stayshore.co.uk/reviews.
Your daily life often goes like this. With Air France, choose instead.
Wow.
Until the 21st of October, put your daily life on hold. Take advantage of Air France moments and book your flight to Beijing from £499, flying from London Heathrow via Paris. Return including tax. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
With the long, hot summer still fresh in the memory, it's easy to forget what's around the corner. Prepare your BMW for whatever the great British weather can muster with a BMW seasonal inspection. For just £39.99, our expert technicians will top up fluids and oil, check the essentials like tyres, wipers and battery, and return your BMW washed, vacuumed and winter ready. Search BMW seasonal inspection. T's and C's apply.
Private healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per person per month.
Just for GP calls.
For a 24/7 GP helpline, physio, diagnostics and more. Now, tell me.
All about my medical history.
No, no medical questionnaires or hidden charges. We like to call it
healthcare done different.
Spot on. Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. 6-month wait for some services. T&Cs apply. Selected surgical procedures after 6 months. 24 in Northern Ireland. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 12:49 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I mean, it was hard to square the triumphalism that we saw in Jerusalem on Monday with the fragility that any peace deals in the Middle East or any ceasefires in the Middle East, history has taught us, are subject to. But the current situation is that aid into Gaza has been cut off over Israeli claims that the bodies of dead hostages are not being returned quickly enough, and the Hamas terrorists have been executing some of their political enemies, murdering them in the streets in the immediate aftermath of the ceasefire. So if reminders were needed of the fragility, then reminders there are aplenty. But I want to rewind slightly, if I may, to the beginning of the week, because we haven't spoken to Noga Tarnopolsky since that, well, I would say, Noga, extraordinary scenes in the Knesset, which I presume took everybody by surprise, inside and outside Israel.
Yes, I mean, I think possibly people who follow Donald Trump very, very closely might not have been surprised. Israel was taken by surprise. And in fact, one of the headlines read, "The day Jerusalem went all MAGA." But what was interesting for me that I wanted to mention is that it was an extraordinary day in which 20 living hostages were released to the immense relief of really, I think, the entire country, it's fair to say, except for the bubble of the Knesset, where the release of the hostages seemed to be a mere asterisk to this love fest, you know, Trump-Netanyahu orgy. Mm. And I thought that day that Netanyahu, you know, the political magician, he may have pulled it off again. And it really became a farce. The Knesset had been stuffed with party activists from the prime minister's party screaming, hollering. But it turned out that it's not so simple, and that the fact that Hamas seems to be playing around with the return of the bodies of hostages who did not survive captivity, while this government sat in the Knesset and guffawed, has not gone down very well. And so this kind of feeling, I would say a placid feeling of relief or even a bit of triumphalism, was burnt out within 24 hours.
For the population rather than for the politicians. So, I mean, it was a lap of honour. It was extraordinary to see a sort of victory lap for circumstances that most people would agree had been imposed upon Netanyahu by Trump rather than a consequence or a delivery of what Netanyahu had both wanted and promised. The other phrase I heard was that it was possibly the opening salvo in an election campaign, which didn't make sense at first, but it makes more sense now.
Well, look, to a great extent, we're trapped right now in Israel between normal politics and an electoral schedule that, yes, as you just mentioned, Israel has entered an electoral year, and under the law, elections must be held within 11 months now, by October of 2026. But one of the things we saw that day in the Knesset, which was less amusing, was Netanyahu's continued effort to simply redo the administration of the state and crush the judiciary. So another part of the controversy and another part of the pall that has fallen over the population, much of the population, is that Prime Minister Netanyahu did not invite to that state occasion at the Knesset the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and the Attorney General, which he's obliged to do under law for any state occasion. And instead, he brought in his brand new, very extremist, messianic director of domestic intelligence, which is never done. These are not normally people who stand up for applause. And in this circus atmosphere at the Knesset, what we saw is that the guy who Netanyahu hopes will be his strong arm in Israeli society stood up to be clapped at, and that the two representatives of the Israeli judiciary were simply absent. And Donald Trump's request for a pardon for Netanyahu, who's on trial for corruption, was, you know, farcical again, a joke. That's not how the law works. But I think that what we have to focus on is that for Netanyahu's point of view, Israeli law just doesn't exist. We saw it again today. He was in court. He had to testify in his trial. He all but mocked the judges. He said he was not feeling well. He said he had to attend to other matters. And finally, he said, I have bronchitis and my doctor's ordering me to rest, at which point the president of the Israeli Association of Public Health Physicians put out a red alert, because Prime Minister Netanyahu went yesterday to see some of the freed hostages whose immune systems are extremely compromised. And so Israelis today are trapped in this burgeoning scandal, which is, did the prime minister lie in court? Was he in full contempt of court when he said he had bronchitis? Or did he risk the lives of hostages who have just been released? And again, when I tell you that that's sort of the feelings of victory that may have been in the hearts of most Israelis, of certainly the people in Hostages Square, they've evaporated completely.
Wow. Wow. I mean, I say a week is a long time in politics, but for 48 hours is a long time as well. I mean, I can't ask you about public opinion, because there's no such thing really, is there? Particularly in Israel at the moment, there's a huge diversity of views and a plurality of opinion. But the whole world was watching events in the Knesset with I think it's fair to say, with a sense of discombobulation and confusion at the tone and at some of the content and at the round of congratulations and applause. How have hostage families most obviously responded to that, but also Israeli society in general? Because I felt there was an attempt to rewrite some recent history during a lot of those speeches, and no one's going to be more aware of the reality than some of the people in Israel who were listening.
You're 100% right, and I'm glad you're asking me that. It went over very, very poorly. Not just this request for pardon, which seemed to supersede Israel's a sovereign state, but a small gesture that I don't think was noticed that much and international channels. At one point of this jubilation, the speaker of the Knesset, who is basically, you know, a crony of Netanyahu, he removed from his lapel the hostages pin, the pin that has come to symbolize the struggle of the hostages' families, as if we're done now. This was one of the ways in which he was attempting to, you know, praise to high heavens Donald Trump. And the families really crumpled. First of all, there were some families who managed to get into the Knesset, whose, for example, Ruby Chen's family, his son, Itai Chen, was an Israeli soldier who was killed on October 7th and whose body was dragged in to Gaza by the killers. Mm. And he said that he just felt crushed at that moment. He was in the gallery viewing this jubilant scene. But also, this was done when all of the hostages had not yet been freed. And I could tell you that the next morning, at least two very prominent people, prominent in Israel, not from the left wing, were very critical of what happened. One, our listeners might know, Idan Amedi, the actor, the Fauda star, who almost died as a reservist in the beginning of this war, and who is known to be a supporter of the prime minister. He's certainly a right-wing figure and well-known in the public. He put up an Instagram post the next morning, enraged. He said, "Very nice to see you all laughing it up in the Knesset, but you will never be forgiven for not bringing them all back home." So that really, it defined a change of tone within 12 hours from one evening to the next morning. Also, a very pained response came from Eitan Hamami, who is the brother of Lieutenant Colonel Asaf Hamami. He was the highest ranking IDF officer who died on October 7th. He died trying to defend the kibbutzim. His body was also dragged into Gaza by Hamas. And it is known that Hamas is holding his body as a kind of leverage in particular. And his brother simply went on the radio. His family has absolutely not criticized the government. They're a well-known military family from the south of the country. And his brother went on the radio and sounded as if his heart was in little bits. Mm. And he said, "How can it be that these people are celebrating a big party?" He said the Knesset was turned into a circus. It looked like a political rally. Where is the somber gratitude for the sacrifice of Israelis? So again, it just, something switched in the atmosphere here in Israel. You say a week is long. In this case, it was 12 hours, yeah, and everything had flip-flopped.
Well, and it may well flip-flop again, in which case we'll call upon your services, Noga Tarnopolsky, to make sense of things. But there you have it, live from Jerusalem, a full account of the changing tides, if you like, in the aftermath of that peace deal. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date on top stories and opinions. Put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Sawbrick will be with you at 4, but now on LBC it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you, James. From 3, have a listen to this. It's Keira Knightley.
We're all going to have to figure out how to live together, aren't we? And we've all got very different opinions.
This was in response to a question which framed J.K. Rowling as running a transphobic campaign. What Keira Knightley said is considered brave, even exceptional these days, after a malign and irrational campaign to discredit and silence women, myself included, who recognise the reality of biological sex. It shouldn't be the case. It shouldn't be anything more than just a sensible thing to say. I'd have gone further than Keira Knightley. I can see why she didn't, but I would have. I'll tell you how later on. There's been a ding-dong at PMQs about China. We'll talk about that too, but we'll begin with Rachel Reeves's plans for the money in your pocket.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Keir Starmer has promised to publish the evidence submitted by the government following the collapse of a Chinese spying trial. Downing Street has strongly rejected suggestions it spiked the prosecution of two men who denied espionage charges. Instead, it blames an assessment made while the Conservatives were in power. During Prime Minister's questions this afternoon, Keir pushed back on claims from the Tories of a cover-up.
The case did not proceed
because the policy of the past government did not meet the test that was necessary. That is the long and the short of it. Far from evading, I have said I will disclose the full witness statements, and the allegation that somehow they were changed is completely and utterly unfounded.
Hamas insists it's working to return the bodies of Israeli hostages as agreed in Donald Trump's ceasefire deal. The remains of three of the four people who were handed over last night have been identified. Israeli officials say the fourth body does not match any of the captives. The competition watchdog has outlined plans to force vets in the UK to publish price lists to stop pet owners being ripped off. The CMA's found consumers aren't benefiting from strong competition. It says people may be paying twice as much for some prescribed medicines than they are online. Lucy Iyer is from the authority.
Something we're hoping to put in place is a requirement on vet businesses and vets to inform consumers that they can buy these sorts of ongoing medicines online and that they may be cheaper. And to do that, you need to get a prescription, and we're going to cap the price of getting that prescription.
A man who was shot during the Manchester synagogue attack has been discharged from hospital. Yoni Finlay is believed to have been hit by a police bullet in Crumpsall earlier this month. It's understood he was helping to block the building's doors as Jihad al-Shami carried out the terror attack. Royal Mail has been fined £21 million for falling well short of its delivery targets. It's required to deliver 93% of first-class post on time, but only managed 77% last year. Ofcom says it's unacceptable that millions of important letters are arriving late. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 47 at 94.05. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of light rain for most this afternoon. Some brighter spells possible in Scotland, Wales and the west of England. A high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
The all-new iPhone 17 Pro is here. Designed from the inside out to be the most powerful iPhone yet. Sounds pretty pro. Get it on O2. Awarded best mobile network coverage by Uswitch. Search O2 iPhone 17 Pro. O2, essential for living.
Based on OpenSignal Awards, UK Mobile Network Experience Report, September 2024. To verify, see opensignal.com/UK Mobile Report.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. We are just over a month away from the budget in November, late November. So let's talk about the questions, the dilemmas, the decisions that Rachel Reeves might have to make. We're focusing on this because she has acknowledged today in an interview that she is, as she put it, looking at tax and spending. Now, that's hardly a revelation, is it, that a Chancellor ahead of a budget would be looking at tax and spending. But it begs questions about which taxes, of course. And I want to put it to you today that what she might do and should do is just stop with the obfuscation around tax increases on income tax, VAT, national insurance, and just make a clear decision. We won't find out until at least the week of the budget, if not the day. But should she just raise income tax by a penny, a couple of pennies on the pound? Should she just do that rather than fiddling around with benefits here and there and fiddling around with winter fuel, as we've seen? There'll be other choices that she can make to raise funds, of course. But is that central commitment from their election campaign? Is that absolutely vital in your mind that Labour sticks to that? I wonder whether for the sake of avoiding any more cuts to public services, for example, you would feel okay about sort of sucking up an income tax rise. Nick Ferrari was talking to the Chief Secretary to the Treasury, James Murray, about all of this morning. Take a listen.
7 out of 7 for living standards, 7 out of 7 for suspected projected inflation, 3 out of 7 for growth. It's a gloom. Whatever numbers you point, it's a very gloomy picture, lastly, Chief Secretary.
Well, no.
That is gloomy. Come on, James. Come on. If that's not gloomy, what is gloomy?
Well, Nick, what I would take...
Bottom in living standards. Bottom in inflation. Virtually bottom in growth.
Look, Nick, what I would say is look at what we've done this year. Look at how we were the fastest growing G7 economy in the first half of this year. Look at how the IMF has increased our growth forecast this year.
But you won't be fastest growing. Look behind the US and the Canada.
But there is fastest growing the G7 in the first half of this year. But there is a lot more to do.
Well, that was James Murray speaking to Nick Ferrari this morning, Chief Secretary to the Treasury, James Murray, not Nick Ferrari, obviously. Dr. Joe Mitchell joins me, a professor in economics at the Bristol Business School, the University of the West of England. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sheila.
Now, as the politics stand at the moment, the government and the Chancellor have sort of boxed themselves in, haven't they, when it comes to income tax, VAT and national insurance. Can you see that changing, given the problems that we've got with our finances? Does it have to change?
The fact that they're boxed in is not going to change. And it was actually obvious, even, I think, before the election, that they were boxed in. That pledge was widely regarded as giving them very little wriggle room, that pledge on not raising one of the big three taxes alongside the fiscal rules. There was a chance, I think, at the time, I would have said it was a low chance, maybe 20 or 30%, that they would get slightly stronger growth than expected. That would mean that the fiscal rules wouldn't bind quite so tightly, interest rates might have come down a bit, and you could have got a positive feedback loop and things would have gradually improved and they would have got away with it. But it's very clear now that that hasn't come to pass. It was pretty unlikely. It was a gamble at the time, and I think it was maybe not a wise gamble. So now they're in the same situation again, really, as they were a year ago, absolutely not where they wanted to be, looking around tax increases, cuts to government spending, changes to the fiscal rules. It looks like it is going to be increases in tax, and I find it hard to
in,
see
in how those they taxes, or at least one of those taxes, those three I mentioned.
That's the question, is do they do it more what we call sort of salami slicing, looking for little bits and pieces. The problem with that, and there are lots of problems with that, one is that politically it's difficult, and that means things get reversed, as we've seen, when you try and make a change and you can't make it stick. Another is that you're picking taxes based on how much it might raise, 2 billion here, 3 billion there, rather than what do we think the long-run tax structure of the economy is, should be, what should our fiscal policy, this sort of long-run planning. And I think the bond markets, which are always the sort of the big scary Halloween monster in the background here, will understand.
The bogeyman. It's the new bogeyman, isn't it? Yeah.
The bogeyman, that's right. Will understand it. But if it's an incoherent package, it's not going to be convincing. So I think it's hard to see how they don't avoid the big three taxes somehow.
All of them going up a bit. Or just one?
No, not all. I think one.
One or other, yeah.
They can't avoid breaking the pledge not to touch one of the big three, I think.
In your view, was it foolish to box themselves in the way they did ahead of the election?
On the economics, it was absolutely foolish because it was clear that it was an almost impossible promise that they made. We will improve government services, we won't raise taxes, and we'll stick to rules on borrowing, which were already pretty tight, and they adjusted them slightly, but they're still pretty tight. It was very, very unlikely that they would be able to stick to those three pledges. The politics